Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Choose life. Choose a job. Choose a career. Choose a family. Choose a big television. Choose washing machines, cars, compact displays, and electrical tin openers. Choose good health, low cholesterol, and dental insurance. Choose fixed interest mortgage repayments. Choose a starter home. Choose your friends. Choose leisure wear and matching luggage. Choose a three-piece suite on hire purchase and a range of fabrics. Choose DIY and wondering who the f*** you are on a Sunday morning. Choose sitting on that couch watching mind-numbing, spirit-crushing game shows, stuffing f***ing junk food into your mouth. Choose rotting away at the end of it all, pissing your last in a miserable home, nothing more than an embarrassment to the selfish f***ed up brats that you've spawned to replace yourselves. Choose your future. Choose life. Why would I want to do a thing like that? I chose not to choose life. I chose something else. And the reasons? There are no reasons. Who needs reasons when you've got head on?
Minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of February in the year of our Lord 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, the home of all good things and people. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday, and welcome to day 12. If you'd like to be part of today's cavalcade of chuckles, it's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. If you would like to get on board with your comments, questions, clarifications, observations, ruminations, ponderings, musings of what nature, Dawn?
A frivolous and silly nature.
Or that, sure. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It is rick@rickemerson.com. That is rick@rickemerson.com. Dawn Taylor can be emailed at dawn@rickemerson.com. The text box on the website is open. You can also message us via Skype if you would like. It's Rick Emerson Show. That is our username via Skype. Here's something I don't understand, and I'm going to get ourselves off track. Just mentioning the Skype thing. Have you seen those bus boards, those ads that are on the side of the TriMet buses? And it says something like Skype to Vancouver, but it's like a thing about going to Canada. It's like some sort of travel to Canada. It's like for a travel agency or an airline or something. But then the tagline is Skype to Canada. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, are you sure it's a travel thing, or is it supposed to look like a travel thing? But really, they're telling you can call on Skype.
I don't think Skype actually does advertising, though.
Yeah.
I don't think Skype does. And I certainly don't think they do like bus boards. I saw it the other day in traffic, and it was one of those ads that's. I mean, maybe it's for Skype, maybe it's not. It seemed very much like it was for, like, an airline or for, you know, I don't know, like, you know, like the, you know, the whatever travel company of someplace trying to get you to go on a, you know, get on a plane to go to Saskatchewan or something. And, but it was one of those ads that was so badly designed, which you see with astonishing regularity, even now in 2011, where you just see, especially with billboards, where you see a billboard that you're going by at 65 miles an hour and some guy has decided to fill it full of tiny, tiny print that you can't possibly read.
Yeah.
And you're going, what is it about? And it's just a big blur as you're going by in the highway. And you just think, some jackass got paid to design and make that. A billboard that will make not one whit of difference in terms of whatever business that that company is doing.
And they failed. Failed.
Hey, speaking of advertising, did you ever watch the Chrysler ad?
No, I didn't.
I was going to send you the link last night, and then I forgot to do it. All right. There should be a service. Ooh, wait. There should be a service online called Linklater. I don't know how you get art in there somewhere. Like if it was some sort of a like some sort of a graphic-based thing, and you could have a service called Art Linklater, where it's like if you mean to send a link to somebody but you don't have access to the email right now, you click the link or you right-click the link, and it goes into a cache of links that will be sent the next time you have email access.
Interesting.
Or links that you mean to forward to people. Linklater. All right. It's like a triple pun almost. All right. Just FYI. I just thought of that right now. My brain always working, Don.
If it only worked with graphics, if it only worked with JPEGs, then it could be Art Linklater.
See, I was trying to get to that, and I couldn't figure out. I can't. That's a bridge too far. I can't quite. That's a chasm. I can't quite just broach at this moment. Well, all right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's Thursday, coming up around 2 o'clock today. That is 27 minutes from now. We'll be talking to Ms. Joelle Carter of the television series Justified, which began its second season last night, which Cheryl Kanakoa started watching, and I don't approve of this, started watching last night. Like, she started watching from the second season. She
no,
hasn't watched
no,
the
no,
I
no,
know,
no, Cheryl.
I know.
Bad.
But what am I going to do? I mean, it's like So I can't smack her over the phone. I mean, I could try, but that doesn't really work.
She doesn't know who these people are or how they've gotten to that point.
See, and if somebody tried to do that by coming into the second season of The Wire, she would say, you're missing out on the entire experience. You're not going to understand anything.
Yeah.
And I would say, it's not true to the same degree for Justified, but still. See, now immediately she's trying to find some horrible emoticon of like a guy pulling out his intestines and waving them. This actually just says, oh, shut up, both of you. And then the emoticon is of a smiley face becoming so angry that it cracks and falls into little tiny pieces. All right. And then she says, some of us have to wait.
Do they really count as smiley faces anymore when they're not smiling and they're like either vomiting or exploding or bursting into flame?
No, that's a good, that's a good point. I think it's if they're doing something that is demonstrably unpleasant or in fact sickening, they probably aren't smiley faces at all.
No.
In point of fact, they're really not. I mean, they're hardly even faces for more than half a second because they just become puddles of goo. All right. You know, here's the thing. As much of a cheapskate as I am, Cheryl is even more so in some ways because she says some of us have to wait weeks for the library to fork it over. I actually had to just give her some copies of The Wire to watch because I'd say, like, have you finished, you know, have you watched season 5 of The Wire? She goes, no, I'm waiting for it to be in stock at the library. And I said, well, okay, but I mean, like, how long? Like, what is the wait time? And if you reserve stuff at the library, and it says you are a hold 542 of 7,000, and you realize it's just going to be like, you know, it's going to be 10-12 years before you just get the thing, which is how The Wire was.
But it's on Netflix, isn't it? Season 1 of Justified.
Well, maybe. I don't know that she actually subscribes. I don't think she uses Netflix.
No, it's just the DVD. It's not on demand on Netflix.
Really? So let me understand this now. So in your mind now, there's only two options. There's either watching it now, instantly, this very moment, or there's watching it never. The idea that you might have to wait a day and a half for it to arrive, as opposed to the library, where the wait for The Wire, seriously, was going to be like 6 months. And I finally just said, like, I'll give you my here's my box set. Just give it back whenever you're done. Take as much time as you need. Netflix is a day and a half.
Yeah.
Remember when you used to have to wait months and months for movies to come out that you were excited about?
Well, the thing
a
with
day and a half.
The thing with getting it, depending on how many discs you get at a time from Netflix, there is that whole, if you're watching a TV show, it can be frustrating if you don't really coordinate, you know, getting the discs and mailing them back, that you have to wait in between, that you watch like 3 episodes in a row. And then it's like you have to mail it in, and then you have to wait. And then it's like 3 days or 4 days to get it back. And so if you have more than one disc that you're allowed at a time, you have to try and overlap them so that one is mailed back at the same time that you're getting the new, you know. See, the thing about this is that Cheryl is a much, I guess, a better and far more ethical person than I am. Because, you know,
She's not using that free internet preview service?
Yes.
That internet screening service to which you subscribe?
Yes, apparently so. I mentioned something online at some point. I can't remember who it was. I think it was Kristen Bowie or someone. And I said, but it's whatever it was, it's available. Like, just go get it. I'm like, well, where would I get it? And I'm like,
the internet?
Like, well, where did you get it? And I'm like, it's like the equivalent of like a guy's trunk in a in a back alley somewhere.
Like one of those guys with a card table full of watches in New York.
Yeah, I always forget that not everyone does that because other people, you know, play by the rules and are concerned about such things.
You know what's weird? This was actually a little bit of a culture shock to me years ago when I first went to New York, because this is, you know, even like I never saw this sort of thing in L.A. Maybe I mean, I guess it's probably around, but I think in New York it's too, because New York is such a pedestrian town as opposed to a commuter town. I think it's more widespread. I remember the first time I was in New York, and I was just, I don't know, I was in Brooklyn or something, and I was walking along the street, and it was like about every 9 yards, there was just some guy who would be walking along with a huge, it was like one of those like bindles that hobos have on a stick, but he was just had it over his shoulder. It was like a blanket that was just knotted up and held as a bag over his shoulder, and then every now and again, he would just stop, set the blanket bag down on the ground, untie it and spread it open, and it would just be full of DVDs of movies that had not yet even come to the theater.
God.
And he would just say, I got your Fellowship of the Ring right here, $1.99. And it was on DVD, and it was just like, where the hell? And it was just stuff that was either just now being released or that was not even going to come out for 3 months. And it's like you could just buy it on DVD for like $4 from some guy in Brooklyn who then just wadded it back up into a blanket and walked down the street. It was the strangest experience. So the internet is sort of like that guy, but that guy, like every other website, is run by him.
Yeah.
And his brother, Hector, who sells porn. I mean, that's pretty much it, you know? And then another guy who just goes, free iPhone, free iPhone, free iPhone! And then they go, shh, you're scaring away the customers.
Yeah, I also like the fact that people think that there must be some kind of convoluted thing you have to go through to actually acquire these things. And it's like, no, really, you just go on Google and look for it, and there it is.
Can I just tell you this? Can I tell you that when I was in Kennewick a few weeks ago visiting my mom's, and, you know, my mother is 75 this year, and my mom has, you know, she's just the regular just, you know, you don't think of your mom as being, your parent as being computer savvy at all, which I guess you really don't have to be these days. I mean, I think really the bar for being computer savvy, what that constitutes, has either been lowered or raised, one or the other. Because it's, you know, because my mom is she has an MP3 player, and she's telling me about, like, she subscribes to, like, the Napster music service, and she's like, and then I can transfer my music onto as many as 3 devices. I'm like, you're 75. But I was at her house, and she's usually, you know, just like a regular laptop. But I noticed this sort of like thing kind of grinding away in the background. Like you can sort of hear when a computer's doing something when it's not being used, you know, when somebody doesn't have it sitting there. And I said, what, your computer's doing something, Mom? What's that? And she goes, oh, I'm downloading torrents of Army Wives. And I said, really? And she said, yes, I'm torrenting the entire 3rd season. And I said, like, okay, whatever.
Okay.
You're awesome.
That is great.
Best mom ever. It is the, remind me to tell you about, remember to tell you about the word moms here in a second. M-O-M-S. Get to that here in a second. It is, let's see, Thursday here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Corpse Watch coming up today. Penis Watch coming up today. And again, Ms. Joelle Carter from last night's Justified. Also, clue number 4 for this week's Name That Snack contest, courtesy of E.H. Vending. Find out more about them by going to ehvending.com. ehvending.com. We have, again, clue number 4 in this week's Name That Snack contest. Don Taylor's tracking the following stories for you on this Thursday.
The fine state of Maine solves the mystery of the serial chicken killer. Mississippi wants to honor a KKK leader with a license plate. And a man stabs his friend to death over a misspelled text message.
Okay, then. By the way, that sounds like it's a hick watch there.
Which one? The Mississippi one?
Yes.
I thought perhaps.
The Mississippi and the Klan and the whatnot?
We can do that.
All right, there you go.
We can make that a
By the way, question. Can I just tell you, last night I spent like, I don't know, 10, 12 minutes emailing everybody I knew and sending them the Fred Durst, the sewage treatment story, and the hairy balls story. And I would just, check this out, balls. And I would send them the link. The great thing about that Fred Durst story, I think it was, let's see if I can actually, if I can find it right here. As always, here's the thing. If you want to find the best version of a story, you know, the best version of any sort of a news story, you go to the British press, because the British press, it's not only do they not have any standards, and not only can they just like, it seems like they can just sort of, you know, they can just sort of slander and libel at will. But they
They're
also
very snarky.
The great turn of phrase from the NME, which is the New Music Express in Britain. There's something about the way that they phrase this. It struck me as hilarious. Limp Bizkit's Fred Durst to have rubbish department named after him. Because then it just doesn't sound like it's a waste treatment plant. It's like the Department of Rubbish, like the Department of Defense. You know, like it's like it's some like a governmental branch or wing of something. Rubbish department. Let's see. What else do we have here? Cheryl says, I'm just afraid I will get caught and I will be the one person they make an example out of. That'd be a thing where they're handcuffing her and her mom and leading them out of the house. You know, the authorities say, this woman, and then they'll cut to Cheryl's face looking all, like, goggle-eyed and afraid in the mugshot, and they'll be, you know, the MPAA will be suing her for $9 million. Here's why I like, I like the immediacy of the internet and why I love the audience. Someone sends this email that says, OMG, 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 Rick, all of the things you love. Salt Lake City, a hot chick named Kelly, shop class, and the phrase, quote, it grabbed the metal and pulled my hand under the blade, end quote, plus pictures. So, and the phrase, doctors saved the index finger. So we'll get to that later on. Apparently there's some exciting story that came out of a Salt Lake City shop class. All right, we did the headlines. We got that going on. There was something else I was going to say, but it sort of escapes me now. Wait. No, it's escaped me. I can't help but notice, Don, that there's a handbook on the table that says sexual harassment in the workplace, making the right choices.
Yeah, that was just sitting there, just smack in the middle of the table.
Would you like to tell everybody how your morning began?
Well, yes. My morning began with me poking at the internet and going, where are you, internet? Why are you not working, internet? And it turned out that both Patrick and I forgot to pay the Comcast bill.
Fail.
So I had to come into work early.
Have fun with that.
And so I came in at like 9, and the fine folks for who do the Fun Employment Radio, Sarah Zillen and Greg Dibbler, and Kenny, they were all here. And so they did their show, and I was in the kitchen working. And then when they left, they left, and when I came in and brought my stuff in, smack in the middle of the table, there is this... this manual, this Xerox manual that says sexual harassment in the workplace, making the right choices. So I grabbed my phone and I texted Sarah Dillon and I said, I'm sorry for sexually harassing you. I sent this message. And about 10 minutes later, I get a message back that just says, who is this?
And this is because she didn't know who you were, because it didn't say Dawn Taylor. It's just because she's got a new phone and you probably never called her.
Right.
And so she just gets a text message from some number saying, sorry, I sexually harassed you.
Yes.
Which, because they've already recorded and posted their show, anybody could have heard the show. So it could have been anybody that she works with or currently or, you know, or worked with in the past.
Or just anyone who sexually
anyone
harassed
ever.
Her at
just,
some point.
Just some guy.
Yeah. So then I had to email back and go, oh, sorry, it's Dawn. I saw the manual. Then I said, wow, and now I actually have harassed you.
See, and I was thinking that you should just let her twist for a while. Just, you know, don't answer the question right away. Just wait for her to call me and go, do you know whose number this is? And just sort of be, you know, just low-grade weirded out by it. Nothing that'll really traumatize her over long periods of time.
See, if I hadn't actually used the word sexual in my message, I might have otherwise. But otherwise, it just seems a little creepy.
She's been home looking at her blinds.
Yeah.
Well, so that was your morning. My morning was... I don't even know if I want to start talking about it. Here's what I'll do. I'll just tell this real short story first, and then I'll... Sorry. Please forgive me. I had burritos.
Wow.
I'll just say that when I said when I referred to my moms at the top of the show... So I kind of fallen into doing that recently because of this thing that happened to Lara. She was out getting her eyeglasses done. Actually, she was there getting them done the same day that she had she was kind enough to take my glasses in to be fixed. And she told this story about she was at the eyeglass place in like on Sunnyside out there. And she told the story about I don't even know if I can really do it justice. But she was doing an imitation of the guy at, like, the Lens Crafters place or whatever, but, you know, but the place where our insurance company sends us to get our eyeglasses done. And as she put it, like the whitest, lamest guy she'd ever seen who was working at the eyeglass place, who was talking to, he was helping a stylish young black man help pick out his eyewear. And he was like, I don't know, like a late teenager, like 17, 18, something like that. And so the kid is like looking at the glasses and he's, you know, trying to figure out like which frames are going to work best and whatever. And so the kid would go over and he would pick up these eyeglass frames and he would come over and, you know, the thing, they do the fitting and you look at him at the mirror or whatever. And she said that the guy was doing that thing which we have all seen the lame white guy do, and which I undoubtedly have done myself from time to time because it's part of the lame white guy cultural imperative of where you're trying to like black up in your in your delivery. And so apparently, at several points, the guy said things like, and if you need to go ask your pops about this, you go ahead and do that, you know, because the dad is right over there.
Aww.
And she said that, like, it was so bad. And the guy at one point talked about being down with something. It was sort of like, well, you know, I'm down with these frames. If you really like these, I think they really work. And she said that it was so bad and so excruciating that when the kid went over at one point to, in fact, ask the pops in question about the frames, apparently, and by the way, that ended with the dad going, "There, how much?" And the kid goes, 175. And then the dad walks over and did exactly what all dads of this is where you know that all dads are the light. There is really we are all brothers under the skin because all dads from all cultures do the same thing. Walked over to the guy and he goes, "The hell with that. What can I get for free?" Because there's that thing with your insurance company where like they will pay up to like $100 for the frame. And so then the kid had to do the walk of shame over to the sad aisle of free frames, which is like, you know, where it's like anything in this 3x9 inch section you can get.
Yeah.
Anything stylish or attractive is going to be on the other side of the store, and that's going to cost you $400, sir. These, though, and it's always just like the bad plasticky Poindexter frames. But she said it was actually so bad, and it was so excruciating to hear the guy, yo, these glasses are really the Izzy thing. Or whatever.
Yo, dog.
That she very nearly went
Check
over.
Check out the temples on these.
She said for the first time in her life, she very nearly went over and actually corrected. She was going to try to pull him aside and try to tell him, just like, look, just be white and lame. Don't try. You're just, you're shaming us all. Anyway, we really don't have time to talk about this adequately because we're going to do some news here and take a break, and we'll come back and talk to Joelle Carter. Joelle Carter from Justified, which aired last night. We'll do the recap of last night's episode. From you, quick thoughts, quick observations about last night's Justified season premiere?
I don't really know. I love the new characters. I love Mrs. Bennett and her sons.
It's funny that you were talking about not being able to make it through Winter's Bone, and yet last night was more or less, it was like a televised version of that show in some ways, because it's like drug dealing and meth cooking hillbillies.
There's also this really weird thing that happens to me when I watch some TV shows, is a lot of shows, whenever they have to... They need to shoot something that's in the woods or in the country or something like this. They go to the Paramount Movie Ranch, and that's where, when I was the formidable days of the Renaissance Fair, when I worked at the Renaissance Fair, that's where it was. And that one cabin, and you will see that cabin in every TV
right.
show. That one cabin, and it's like, you know, on this huge hunk of wooded property that's the old Paramount Movie Ranch, which is in which is just inland a little bit from Malibu, and it's really distracting to me because I'm just looking at it and going,
you've seen it everywhere.
Well, and I used to do the Renaissance Fair there, like where some of these shots are actually being shot,
right?
And I'm going, that's the road where the thing. And yeah, I think the booth I worked at was like right back there. In fact, I used to camp right behind that tree, you know. And so it completely takes me out of the narrative.
It's like watching like Leverage or something, or anything that's filmed here, and you're trying to get into the story, but you can't. You know, you're like, I think my house is over there or something.
Yeah.
And you're trying not to be distracted by the fact that it's filmed in Portland.
A little bit distracting, but wow. You have to watch this show, by the way, just listeners. If you are not watching Justified, you need to start watching Justified, particularly since we're going to start recapping it, and you don't want to have things spoiled. But the ending of that episode was awesome.
It was great.
And I love a show that I love it when producers and directors, showrunners are savvy enough to know that if you cast a recognizable character actor in a role, we assume nothing bad will happen to him.
Right.
We assume he's going to be a recurring character. and then they just pull the switcheroo, because that never used to be the case.
Right.
You always knew somebody was a red shirt because you've never seen them before. But if it was somebody that is actually a character actor of some stature,
you figure he'll be around.
You know that, you know, he's going to keep coming back. And there, a lot of showrunners are getting wise to that, and they have no problem with offing someone that you recognize and you know, just to completely F with your expectations.
Television has become much more merciless in that way, and I like it because it keeps you off guard. You know, it keeps you off kilter, where you're just, because otherwise you're just unspooling the whole thing in your head. Where you're already, I mean, there's so many of those shows. Like, I think it was, I'm almost certain it was you, because who else would it have been? Who, like, a year and a half ago gave me, like, one of the whole seasons of Dallas for no reason on DVD?
That was not me.
I think it was you, because I think it was sent to you to review, and you didn't want it, and you brought it to the studio and gave it to me unopened. You're like, here, have season 7 of Dallas.
Maybe,
you know
maybe
why?
I did.
Here's the thing. No offense, it's still in the trunk of my car, unopened, with the pizza. Actually, the pizza's gone. The episode of Dallas is still there, still wrapped up. But it's like, but I've actually watched some of those shows from the 80s, like, you know, your Dallas or your dramas. Like, if you, you know, if you go back and you watch, like, L.A. Law, it's a bad example, but, you know, Hill Street Blues or any of those dramas that seemed so gritty or so real at the time, or the ones that, you know, where the writing had all this depth to it, and they telegraph everything from, like, scene one. Not just in the writing itself, but also in things like casting and in things like the way they frame a shot. And how many times you watched a movie and the way the shot is framed, you can go, oh, somebody's obviously going to come out of that corner over there and, like, jump at the guy, because you can just tell that they've left enough space in the shot. And TV showrunners are getting savvy enough, as you said now, to realize your expectations and then do about 40% of the time subvert them, which is great because it keeps you, because then you're off kilter and you are able to lose yourself in the program because you don't quite know how everything's going to work. So, yes, no, we're on the same page there. Well, we should do some news here just so we can... we'll either do news until Joelle Carter calls, or we might possibly take our break early just so we don't get too overtime. But just so you don't, just so I don't forget about this later on, I'll give you the one sentence description, which is that my refrigerator is no longer working. And that's a thing you don't really realize until the milk tastes bad in your mouth. And then you realize that everything in the fridge is warm.
Yeah.
And then you realize at the same moment you don't know how to fix it. So, you know, so I got that to look forward to when I get home. It's just going to be a whole lot of...
So do you have, like, food in, like, coolers on ice, or did you just get rid of everything, or is it just rotting in
your
house?
Where would I be getting ice from? The refrigerator's not working.
You go to the store. You go to the store, get a couple of bags of ice, put them in, like, a cooler.
Well, that would require having coolers, which I don't own. And also,
Doesn't your wife go camping?
It's a long story.
All right.
It's not a long story. I'm just inept.
Okay.
Well, anyway, we'll talk about it later. So that was my night / morning, was trying to figure out exactly if I knew how to fix a refrigerator, which, by the way,
well,
clearly
the answer is,
I don't.
Of course, no.
I mean, demonstrably, the answer to that is no. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program at the News Desk. It's Don Taylor.
And now, from the News Desk, this is Don Taylor.
Abundant snowfall in Bethel, Maine, helped explain why a local barred owl had turned into what some were referring to as a serial chicken killer. The owl, which, like other birds of prey, had been experiencing trouble finding food because of a dense snowpack, discovered an easy source inside a farmer's barn. Now, this is actually a story that was in the news for a few days ago that I had read, because there was some concern wondering why this farmer had chickens that he kept finding decapitated.
Right.
So what happened was, it was an owl, very, very hungry owl. Turns out the chickens were too large to carry away, so the owl would simply decapitate them and fly off with their heads.
Okay, then.
It had killed one chicken a day for nearly a week before it was captured on Sunday and taken to a rehabilitation center.
Really?
In Freedom, Maine.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do the O'Reilly owl thing there. Oh. That was inadvertent. But what do you mean it was taken to a rehabilitation center?
Was it
given electroshock and shown pictures of lady owls and told to think normally?
Something. Well, apparently they say the owl, and I'm not making this up, this is what it says here, the owl apparently is suffering from stress and may soon be released back into the wild. So I guess it's going to some kind of an owl spa where they'll let it, like, relax for a while.
It wasn't like being sent to an owl re-education camp of some kind where it was shown pictures of our glorious leader and told to recite 2 + 2 = 5.
I really don't know. Barred owls typically feed on squirrels and voles. It's not normal for them to enter buildings and attack chickens, but when threat of starvation looms, you know, they'll do that. A woman who's a biologist with the state's Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife told a newspaper that owls don't have very good luck getting at their prey right now because there's such a deep snowpack. And when you combine that with the rain that they'd gotten recently, it created a little ice pack on top of it, makes it even harder for them to get the squirrels and the voles. So the owl was just flying into the barn and beheading chickens and then flying off with the chickens' heads to eat.
Here's the thing. I got three thoughts. One, this is why I don't worry about nature. This is why I don't worry about the rest of the earth. When people say, you know, we got to save the earth, we got to save the environment, that is a thinly veiled way of humans saying we must save ourselves. Because the earth doesn't, like nature as a whole, obviously is an undulating, fluctuating thing, and it constantly is morphing and evolving, and things are dying out and being born and whatever. And everything that's alive is going to be dead someday. And, you know, what are you going to do? But nature as just an entity doesn't have any problem staying alive. You know, you start screwing with owls, guess what? They come into your home and they cut the heads off your chickens. And that's it. And, you know, and there's dick you can do about that. Secondly, so we've got the polar bears that don't have any snow. We get the owls that have too much snow. Has anybody considered just bringing the polar bears here or perhaps taking the snow there and just moving it?
I would imagine the people who live in Maine probably would argue that they don't want the polar bears.
Well, look, we can't have it. Look, sometimes you got to break eggs or Mainers to make an omelet. And, you know, I mean, look, it's part of it. You know, look, if you really care about the polar bears, it seems like you got to be able to sacrifice a little for them. You know, like maybe a leg or something. Or just, you know, it just seems weird that there's too much snow. You know, like everything is melting everywhere, and yet, like, Chicago's under, like, 40 feet. Did I send you that picture of the freeway in Chicago?
No.
Where it was, like, full-on Walking Dead stuff? Oh, it's creepy. I'll show it to you. It's, like, one of the creepiest photos I've ever seen. It is one of the – it's the major freeway. I don't know what it is, but it's the major freeway that goes into the city of Chicago. It is frozen solid, just a white wasteland as far as you can see. And then the cars are all just stopped and covered in ice because – none of them could move, and so everybody just had to get out of their cars and walk somewhere. And then the storm came along and went and just covered everything with ice and froze it in place. Wow. It looks just like the promotional imagery for Walking Dead, where he's on the horseback riding into the city. My third thought is that there exists an owl rehabilitation center.
Well, it's probably for various kinds of wildlife. I mean, they have those places when some idiot decides that, you know, he's going to, you know, keep a cougar in his house, you know, or somebody has like a cage out back that they get some ratty old lion that they bought from a circus or something like that. And when these people get shut down or what have you, there are these wildlife sanctuaries, right, and places where they bring the animals. And then the animals either like live there sort of forever, or in some cases with like the owl, I guess they can kind of like feed it and then give it some food and make it feel better about itself and then send it back on its way.
So it's not like a Jack Bauer like thing where they're shining a light to talk, you know?
No, it's not like the owl is sharing a room with Charlie Sheen and fighting over porn.
Where is Julia? You know, and then, you know, just don't know. All right, I had something else to say. Wait. No. Ah, so this really is like the home in the countryside where your dog occasionally would go off to live.
Yeah.
So that does really exist. Your dog didn't go there. There's
one in Los Angeles. I had a friend who worked there for a number of years that's in the Los Angeles area in the San Fernando Valley. And they not only take wild animals that have been seized from people's homes, but they also have animals there that used to be in show business and, like, got too old to do commercials and stuff. So they've got, like, some bears and a couple of lions.
That's
and, like,
adorable.
A tiger and stuff. And they live at this ranch.
Oh, my God. The Cartoon Network needs to be making, a sitcom that's based in that home right now. It's like the Fletcher Memorial Home for aging circus animals, or, you know, for entertainment animals, you know, past a certain age. And then so you got, like, you know, like the third Lassie. There's always boring everybody with stories about, you know, that second Lassie was a slut, and I did all of her stunts, you know, yeah.
I was the one who knew how to open the doorknobs.
We've heard it, Betsy. Just stop it, for the love of God. You know, and then it just cuts to like a card room, you know, where like Francis the Talking Mule is accusing Flipper of cheating. And there's a whole lot of, you know, I would totally watch that.
I would,
I'm not even stoned and I'd watch that. Awesome. It's the best show ever. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here in just a few minutes, we'll be talking to Ms. Joelle Carter from Justified, which premiered last night. So we'll just go ahead and roll through this segment. We'll keep it here, as they say.
We can do that
because it's the thing where, like, as soon as we take a break, you know, that's immediately like when she'll call. That's just the way.
I'll try and read stories that won't be too horrifying should she actually call and be put on hold.
Read stories of no more than 140 characters each.
Okay.
Done.
Here we go. A man in Crawfordsville, which I'm not sure where Crawfordsville is, but let's say it's Florida.
Someplace sophisticated.
It sounds like it could be Florida.
Hey, guess what's happening?
Is she calling?
Yes, I believe that is, in fact, the case. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Coming up later on, we'll have clue number four in the EHVending.com Name That Snack contest for this week. Our next guest can be seen Wednesday nights on FX, where she plays the role of Ava Crowner on the hit series Justified, which is awesome, by the way, which you really do need to be. I don't care if you have to carve out time in your schedule that would normally be reserved for, you know, family, friends, and loved ones. It really is it is worth watching. Return for its second season last night at 10 p.m. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, Ms. Joelle Carter. Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing really well. How are you guys?
I am doing splendidly. I'm here with my co-host, Don Taylor, and I have to tell you, about 5 minutes ago, we nearly had to physically stop ourselves from just going on and on and on about last night's episode and actually get some of our other sort of news done, because it would have just taken over the entire show. We were just sort of gushing about...
News.
Justified is one of those shows that I found myself just telling everybody about and just evangelizing to them relentlessly about the show and about how great it is. The first season of Justified ended with your character heading into the woods after being pinned down during a shootout. And I know that we know a little bit of what happens afterward, obviously not everything, but I'm curious, when you guys filmed that sequence, did you know what happened next? Did they tell you guys, here's what's going to happen next season after this sequence?
Well, we filmed it where I came out of the woods right as Raylan was watching Boy drive down the street. So I had already came out of the woods, and then when I saw the take that they used, they decided that I didn't come out of the woods. And I'm like, well, what happened? What happened to Ava? And everyone keeps asking me, and I'm like, I don't know. She's in the woods running. I guess I'll find out, you know, when season two starts.
FX, actually, not alone among networks, but perhaps more so than most other networks, FX can be pretty ruthless with the way that it treats the characters on their TV shows. Occasionally, The Shield comes to mind, where something will happen right out of the blue, or a character is killed, or their character takes a hairpin turn in the plot that you didn't see coming. Is Justified the same way, where when you get the script for each episode, you have, you know, maybe not no idea, but maybe not always a total idea of what's going to happen? Do you expect those kind of surprises?
Oh, I totally expect them. And I try to pry the information out of the writers. And sometimes I think they have an outline and they kind of know what's going to happen, but they don't want to commit to anything, because just like Elmore Leonard, who loves to dissect his characters and think, okay, what could happen in this scene that's a little different or a little odd for this person's normal, you know, everyday life activities. So I kind of like that. It's exciting. I think it's a great show for FX in that way that they do keep you guessing.
Justified does have a very distinct vibe, in the sense that everybody on the show, even the heroes, they all have the feel of an outlaw. Everybody is some degree of badass, one way or the other, regardless of where they fall on the moral spectrum. Is that there on the page, or is it something that came out of the rehearsing and through the direction, in your opinion?
Well, I'm a badass, so I mean, they had written Ava completely different, but when I brought myself to the part, they couldn't do anything about it. I mean,
so did you find the character?
I think it is.
Did you find the character kind of morphing and changing a bit as the season progressed because of your personality?
Totally. I think a character always morphs based on your personality. I think I brought a lot of heart and softness, actually, to the part that they didn't expect. And then it was just written to where I can let my strong part come out. I mean, this is a woman who decides in a moment, it's better if I kill my husband and risk going to jail than, you know, just stay here and not know what's going to happen the next time he gets drunk. He could just kill me, you know. So she was like, I just want to live, and life is better if I take this risk. And she just keeps taking these risks along the way.
And in fact, in the very first episode of the first season, the first episode of the series, your character shoots and kills her dick of a husband. When you were auditioning for the series, Did you know, did you realize right away what a strong, tough character Ava Crowder was? I don't know if you auditioned with something they eventually used or if you auditioned with some sort of a stock scene. Did you get a sense right off of what kind of character she was?
Oh, yeah, they auditioned with the scene where he comes to the door, Raylan does, and I just kiss him, and I'm like, oh, I got to play this girl. And then she, you know, proceeds to seduce him by telling him the story of how she killed her husband. So it's just like, this is brilliant. And it was so Elmore Leonard, and it's fun. I mean, I think that's why people stay tuned to the show, is because it's fun, and these characters are unpredictable.
We're talking with Ms. Joelle Carter. She plays Ava Crowder on Justified, which airs Wednesdays at 10 p.m. On FX. Season one and season two, we'll undoubtedly have more of this. You shared a number of scenes with Walton Goggins, who's really he's a master at playing characters who are deeply, deeply conflicted, sometimes bordering on unstable. And I apologize for asking such a cliched question, but how would you describe him when he's out of character? Because you see him on the screen, and he is so unbelievably intense, and you can't really imagine him just hanging out at the craft services table. So, is he a guy that stays with the character a little bit, you know, after they call cut, or does it switch off?
Walton definitely has a craft, and he has his own way, of acting. But he is one of the most grounded, sweetest, gentlemanly people that you will ever meet. And it's just like this, I have to sit in the makeup trailer while they're like, Walton this, Walton that. And I'm like, okay, let's show some love for Joelle and stop talking about Walton. But he's a great guy. And what he's doing is craft. He's sculpting that character. And it's pretty genius. And I am a lucky lady because I get to work with him a little bit this year, a little bit more.
And you do work with two actors who do sort of controlled crazy better than almost anybody in the business. I mean, Walton Goggins and Timothy Oliphant, who always has that little bit of crazy in his eyes, and it, which is absolutely genius.
Oh, now Tim is crazy.
It is this look of just, as Don said, a barely contained zeal or glee or just a little bit of spark of unpredictability that fills every sequence, no matter what the scene is about, no matter what is happening in the story arc. It's imbued with this little bit of tension because you realize that to some degree these are characters who have, you know, several different directions they could go at any given moment. Their behavior could go in any one of a number of ways, which is one of the reasons I think why people have latched onto the show. And Metacritic, actually, which sort of aggregates reviews of television programs and other things, actually Justified is in what they call their universal acclaim bracket, which is great, and it happens so rarely. With shows, did you get a sense when you were reading the script the first time of how great it was going to be, or is that a thing that you'd never know until you see it?
Yeah, I didn't know, I knew that the short story was pretty brilliant, and you can have high hopes, but it also has to all happen, all have to kind of come together with a project. I had high hopes for the character, and it was like a potential reoccurring. So for me, I didn't even know if I was coming back. And it just really, the chemistry and the direction and being in my house was like, there was no acting required. I was like, oh, yeah, this is where Ava lives. So it really all came together with the producers and Graham Yost, a brilliant way of adapting Elmore's writing. It was a gift. I'm very happy to be a part of it.
When you first saw an episode of the show cut together front to back, and you saw a completed episode, obviously when you're acting, you know, you see the scenes that you're in, and sometimes you see other pieces, but you don't get a sense of the whole sometimes until it's completed. What was your reaction the first time you saw an episode of it all put together?
Well, I remember walking to do some ADR, and Tim was outside, and he was like, have you seen it yet? I was like, I haven't seen anything yet. And he's like, he took me in to, like, show me my scenes. He's like, you know, the whole episode comes to life when I come to your door. He's like, this is, he's like, this is, I think we got something here. And so, and then I went into Sony and watched it. I was like, I think they might have something here. So I was, yeah, it was kind of new right away. It really captured, you know, the place is actually a character in itself. So that's what was so wonderful.
I wanted to ask you something non-Justified related. You've been in a couple of different projects that I think that I personally think were just grossly underappreciated. You were on the TV show Wonderland, which didn't.
Hello.
It didn't last long, but it was marvelous. And you were in
wasn't it? Ted Levine.
I know you worked with Ted Levine.
Sorry.
No, it's all right. He is awesome. And you are in the movie Swimming, which I loved, by the way. And I know you produced a couple of, you co-produced or produced a couple of small independent movies. I was wondering if you have any other projects that you're working on in sort of that genre there.
I am currently working on a movie that has to do with adoption. I adopted a little girl this year, so the experience was wonderful, and it also had a lot of humor in it and tragedy, and I just thought this would make a brilliant script. So I'm working on that, and hopefully we'll co-produce and maybe have my husband direct that.
Nice.
And then a few TV projects that have come my way that people want to attach me to. We'll see what happens.
We're talking with Ms. Joelle Carter of Justified. The show airs Wednesday night at 10 p.m. on FX. As we get ready to wrap things up, I wanted to ask you something because I am endlessly fascinated by people, really in any career, but especially in the arts, and how they came to follow that, how they came to pursue it. Was there a particular moment when you knew that you wanted to act, when you said, like, this is what I'm going to do with my life, this is what I'm going to pursue?
I don't know. I think I knew it subconsciously ever since I was a little girl. I was a little shy, and I'd always play out scenarios in my head. And when I actually got into my first acting class, they were like, it's really important to daydream. And I was like, oh, I got that one down pat. I started off modeling and did a few commercials. I was so intrigued with the camera and getting behind the camera. Some of the guys were like, you're supposed to be over there, you know. The whole thing, just as I started tapping into it, started falling into place.
Well, congratulations on being part of such a fantastic show, and best of continued success in life, art, and all things. Thank you for spending some time with us.
Thank you, and keep watching.
Thank you. There you go. That is Joelle Carter of Justified. The show airs Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. on FX, and you really, really, really ought to be watching it. All right. Joelle Carter, ladies and gentlefolk, thank you. Awesome. Fantastic. We controlled our, you controlled your giggling fangirlism.
I did. She has worked with both Ted Levine and Walton Goggins.
And Timothy Oliphant.
Oliphant.
Who, by the way, here's the thing. I feel like such a dick even saying this because I don't feel this way anymore, obviously. But I used to think of Timothy Oliphant before Deadwood. I would think of him, people would say, Timothy Oliphant. I'd say, who? And then they would show me a picture of him, because I just hadn't really seen him in anything that really caught my imagination. And I would always just think of him as that guy that I confused with Michael Biehn.
Oh.
Which is, it's just terrible because I just hadn't seen him in any, you know, I hadn't really seen him in any breakthrough. It's like Thomas Jane. You know, Thomas Jane was like that guy that I confused with Aaron Eckhart until I saw him in, even after Boogie Nights, until I saw him in The Mist, I think. And that's when I went, oh, Thomas Jane, he's an individual person. He's actually got his own identity. And, you know, but Oliphant, you're really, really right when he's just got that strange cackling glee that is just underneath the surface. And it's a testament to, you know, not just Joelle Carter, but everybody else on that show, that they are not overwhelmed by that when they're on the screen. Because I think for a less talented actor or actress, it would be easy to be on the screen with Walton Goggins or Tim Oliphant and just and to vanish, because they would just consume the entire thing.
Well, two things that I think Timothy Oliphant that you should check out now, since I've converted you to a Timothy Oliphant fan. One is that movie, A Perfect Getaway.
Yes, which you told me about.
You have to see that. And also, if you've never seen the sort of fluffy but still funny comedy, The Girl Next Door.
Oh, is that the porn chick who moves into a suburban street,
right,
or whatever? Yeah.
Timothy Oliphant is her manager.
Uh-huh.
And he's so good. He's so good at doing the insanely, drippingly charming menace. He's both hilarious and sleazy and just delightful in every way.
You know, the great thing about guys like that, and we've talked several times about people who just continue to be A-list stars, or they have that sort of aura or vibe around them, even if they're not necessarily in great movies or hit movies all the time. And I think a lot of it is with guys who just, they play every part like it matters. Even if they're in a movie that they sense, I'm not saying their sense it's going to be a bad film, but even if they sense it's going to be a fluff film, or you know, it's just a romantic comedy, or it's just like a piece of summertime entertainment or whatever. But guys who just grab the part and they just go after it with both hands, and he strikes me as one of those like incapable of doing anything less guys.
Well, and The Girl Next Door, to be fair, is also another one of those films that on paper it looks like it's going to be just complete crap,
right?
And then you watch it, and it's actually really pretty good.
And that's not the girl in that isn't Anna Faris, is it?
No, I can't remember who it is.
Anna Faris is in a movie not unlike that. She's in
I think it's the girl who's the daughter in 24 or something like that, isn't it?
Anna Faris is in the Bunny Next Door or the Playmate Next Door or whatever the hell, which I think those came out around the same time, and they're getting confused in my head.
Yeah.
All right. We should do this. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about last night's episode of Justified. We'll continue with the news and so forth. Corpse Watch coming up, Penis Watch coming up, and so forth. Stay there. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Or getting rich, man, you know I'm back. Quick on the draw, raw, so you notice that. Place your bet, I'm a threat, put your dough on that. Mr. Preacher Man, tell me what my blessings are. A life so tainted and hard, man, I'm stressing hard. Any contributions, place them in my jar. I'm still on the run, with my gun, racing hard. Give it up, hands to the sky.
You can run, but you can't hide.
I'ma ride till I die. Give it up, hands to the sky. Till I die. My knuckle game is lethal, can't help it, I'm honest. Sick with the gunplay, no antibiotics. I spaz out, people think I'm sorta psychotic. A legend in the hood, I'm borderline iconic. People see me coming, they run and never have to chase them. Let the pastor take them, take a shot of Jack. Cock the shotty back, one shot, two shot. Lay your body flat, the prolegies are locked. My soul's forsaken, I can see your heartbeat from the holes I'm making. Call me a ghost rider, add you to my plot. I ain't a killer, I just shoot a lot. You better give it up, hands to the sky.
You can run, but you can't hide.
I'ma ride till I die. Give it up, hands to the sky.
You can run, but you can't hide.
I'ma ride till I die.
News Network.
You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. sooner or later gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut him down, tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Well, my goodness gracious, let me tell you the news. My head's been wet with the midnight dew. I've been down on bended knee, talking to the man from Galilee. He spoke to me with a voice so sweet, I thought I heard the shuffle of angels sweet. He called my name and my heart stood still when he said, John, go do my will. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut him down, tell him that God's gonna cut him down. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down, sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man, but as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later gotta cut you down, sooner or later gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down, tell him that God's gonna cut you down, tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. All right. You have to avert your eyes for a moment. I have to adjust my pants.
Okay.
There we go. Okay, nice.
Now, were you adjusting your pants or were you adjusting, you know, yourself within your pants?
Well, it's in the pant area. I was adjusting something between here and here. We'll just leave it at that.
Were your parts getting all twisted up?
I didn't say that. You said that. That's in no way did I make that observation. Certainly nothing was being chafed. I have to say, first of all, we have to thank Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa for securing the interview with Ms. Joelle Carter from TV's Justified. By the way, so Cheryl said, yeah, good interview, sounded great, and then immediately above that, sort of animated emoticon of Justin Bieber. This is clearly her new. This is the thing that we're just going to get like forever now. It's 503-505-6964. Still to come today, we got your corpse watch on the way, penis watch coming up, and so forth. Oh, somebody wants to know. I didn't get a chance to listen live yesterday. What did you end up talking about on Ham-Fisted Radio?
We talked about what did we talk about? We talked about the movies. We did a thing where apparently Bobby came up with this idea. There's a movie, because of Snakes on a Plane, a director is now considering doing a movie that's just called a 3D shark movie, you
okay.
know. And so Bobby, I guess, on Facebook had mentioned that, you know, why don't we just do that with every movie? Just say what it's about and that'll be the title. And so it just sort of exploded his Facebook page, and all these people started suggesting like 4 or 5 word descriptors that would be the title of the movie. So he was throwing them at me so to make me guess the movie. So that was kind of fun.
I remember when Snakes in a Plane actually first came out, in like the first week or so that story was in the news. They're like, oh my God, no, it's not a joke. They're actually making the. And then there was that weird logo for Snakes on a Plane for a while that was like, it looked like it was handwritten on a cocktail napkin.
Yeah.
It was before the actual logo that was color came out. It was literally just like a pen and ink drawing of a plane with like a sort of badly drawn like cartoon snake around it. And we there was like this 3 or 4 day period where we couldn't tell if it was a real movie or if somebody was just pulling our leg, if it was some sort of an elaborate viral hoax or whatever. And then when it turned out that they really were making a movie called Snakes on a Plane, I remember we had two discussions that seemingly went on forever. One of them was like, what should be the movie the next, you know, and it was like big boob girl blowing up stuff. And then the other thing was where I think we did a contest where we took classic movies and then we would give overly literal descriptions to classic films that people have to try to guess what they were. But in a way, like I kind of appreciate that actually because it forces people to it forces them to decide what their movie actually is about,
yeah,
as opposed to as you would say movies made by committee that end up having 75 different plots, none of which mesh together because it's 40 different versions of the script that have all been shoved into one 90-minute conglomeration of celluloid. So I'm all for it.
Yeah, like for example, we had some blue feline people save a tree. That would be Avatar.
Okay.
But somebody else suggested Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Well, see, there you go.
Because it kind of is, really, you know. F it, dude, let's go bowling.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. By the way, before we go back to the news desk, Anna Faris in The House Bunny, Girl Next Door, Elisha Cuthbert.
Right. So there the you daughter go. From 24, I was right.
Which I didn't watch. So yeah. 24 is a show. Let me ask you this. Did you watch that all the way to the end?
No.
Okay.
I watched the first season, and that was as far as I got.
I got one episode into the first season, and I think that was only because we were giving away a box set, and I took it home before the listener was going to pick it up, and I decided I would power through it. And I powered through one episode of 44 minutes, and I went, done. And I didn't pick it up again. And I know people who are huge fans of that show. And I just, And I didn't pretend to be a viewer. Like, we did this interview with Kiefer Sutherland. It's not like I lied. I just sort of, you know, I said things that, you know, that probably made it appear as though I were a bigger fan of the show than I actually was. He was really, really great. I couldn't get into the show for some reason.
Yeah, I watched the first season, and I think it was sort of a matter of being a completist. I had begun the 24 hours. I must complete the 24
right.
hours. But it was, once it was over, because essentially it was a gimmick.
Right.
Once it was over, I kind of realized I was done with it. And when the next season came, and as soon as it started, I actually started to watch the first episode of the second season. And as soon as it started, it just kind of annoyed me because I sort of felt like, yes, but we did this already.
Right, right.
We already did this 24-hour thing, and we're done now.
Well, that's one of those great pitch meetings that they have somewhere where they go, and the great thing is it's 24 episodes, each episode an hour. It's a whole day. And the guy goes, great, you got yourself a production deal, kid. And he stamps it. And on the way out of the room, the two guys look at each other and go, what do we do for the second season? The guy goes, we'll figure that out later. We got the deal. I mean, and that's, because it's all about getting your foot in the door. So.
Plus, it just really bothered me that he never stopped to, go to the bathroom.
Someone says, you opened the cellophane on someone else's gift. Jesus, man, have you no scruples? Apparently not. So, you know.
Oh, come on. Like, you've never bought a book for someone and then, very carefully thumbed through it and read it yourself before you gave it to them?
Well, and also,
sir,
it's a gift. It's not like I was, something I bought for somebody's bar mitzvah. It was a radio station giveaway prize. I mean, let's not get our knickers in a wad, shall we?
Yeah.
And now.
Sorry, but I didn't mean to step on you there.
All you were doing was just spoiling the person's... You were just spoiling the person's opportunity to resell it on Craigslist or
denying
eBay
them the irreplaceable fun of going, God damn it, how do you get this stupid cellophane sticker off the top and bottom of the DVD so that I don't crack the case when I try to open it? I tell you something, I'm going to find the guy that invented that, and we're going to execute him halftime at the Super Bowl.
Let's do this as our Hick Watch.
Let's see. Your Hick Watch is coming up momentarily. Wait, there we go. Here's your Hick Watch for Thursday.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering all around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good.
Oh, yeah. Here is Don Taylor with your Hick Watch for Thursday.
Mississippi is pretty relaxed about who's allowed to put out commemorative license plates. But a proposal from the state's Sons of Confederate Veterans branch could soon change that. To honor the 150th anniversary of the Civil War, which the SCV calls the War Between the States.
That's War of Northern Aggression, Don.
Yes. The group wants to release a plate featuring Confederate General and early Ku Klux Klan leader Nathan Bedford Forrest. While the SCV, which previously issued plates with Confederate flags on them, says that Forrest was a military hero who distanced himself from the KKK toward the end of his life, critics are still stunned. When told about this, the state's NAACP president, Derek Johnson, said, "Seriously? Wow."
It doesn't seem like distancing yourself from the Klan sounds like a full-on recusal. Distancing yourself—that's—you know what it is. Distancing yourself from the Klan is like when people talk about—it's like when people talk about equal rights, and this is always like some—it's always like some redneck relative of yours who's trying to pretend that he's not a bigot, and he'll say, "Well, you know, I believe we should have—you know—we should have tolerance for people that are different. Tolerance—you know what? Tolerating is what you do to a snowblower that's outside your window, yeah. You know, early in the morning. You can't quite go out and beat the guy to death with a golf club, even though you want to.
Yeah, I'm not
tolerating.
I'm not fond of us using the word tolerance as a word for, you know, getting along with other people. Because, yeah, tolerance basically means gritting your teeth and putting up with
something.
It
means you're biding your time as long as you have to.
Yeah.
So the distancing oneself from the Klan doesn't really sound like that's a – it doesn't sound like a renunciation.
And this is a point many historians do agree that he did walk away from the Klan at some point. But they say that it's really kind of a moot point because the Klan had already turned violent before he left it.
Well, and also – and so what in the Confederate Army? He was a
general.
A general. So this is and this is who we're talking about?
General Nathan Bedford Forrest.
Nathan Bedford Forrest. Here's the thing. I know we've got X number of listeners in the South or whatever. And so, you know, whatever. If some guy wants to get all, you know, hung up and, you know, all bent out of shape about his, you know, cultural heritage or whatever. I mean, whatever your hobby is your hobby. But here's the thing. There's no other country in the world in which the losing army gets to, like, hang their flag places. Here's the thing. You lose the war, you don't get to hang your flag anywhere. If you lose the war, by the way, a war you started, guess what? You don't get to go, like, putting the guys who led the war on coins and bills and crap. That's just not the way it works.
Yeah, and then you can find that some people, the people in the South who call it, you know, War of Northern Aggression, apparently they revere him as a military genius. The other thing is that he is also reviled by others. Partly, yes, because he was a Klan Grand Wizard in Tennessee after the war, and also because he led a massacre in 1864 of black Union troops.
Sounds like a real prize.
So there is a Facebook group called Mississippians Against the Commemoration of Grand Wizard Nathan Forrest, which features a drawing of a hooded Klansman in the center of a regular Mississippi car tag. So, yeah, it's a Mississippi license plate with a picture of a hooded Klansman on it.
See, that's almost – but see, don't you think in a weird way that's almost what they should do? If they oppose this, they should instead – that's what they should do is, you know, the group, as opposed to just starting a Facebook page to bitch about this guy possibly being put on the license plate, they should instead counter with a proposal to put a huge hooded Klansman picture right in the center of the plate and just say, like, look, this is clearly what you're after. This is clearly what you want. So we'll just skip to the bottom of the page and do this and just raise the debate to levels of inanity.
And in Mississippi, it might be possible you could actually do that, because apparently one of the reasons this is an issue at all is because Mississippi lawmakers are pretty lax when it comes to, like, you know, just letting anybody have a license plate who wants one. There are over 100 specialty license plates for Mississippi.
Really?
Including wildlife conservation, breast cancer awareness. One has Elvis Presley on it. One says God Bless America. The biggest sellers, unsurprisingly, are NASCAR designs and one that says Choose Life.
Now, there was a big debate about that one. There was some organization that was trying to get the Choose Life thing banned because you're not supposed to be able to have political messages. And they were claiming that that was a political message, but clearly not. Wonder what that takes to get, in other words, is that a thing that, like, a group can just, if they get a number of signatures or the amount of money or something, or does it take, do the lawmakers actually have to instigate that themselves?
I guess they have to approve it. I'm not sure obviously I don't know what the situation is of how you ask for it in the first place.
I'm wondering if we could get a Rick Emerson license plate. That's really where I'm going with this.
In Mississippi?
Well,
maybe.
Sure. Why not? You start in Mississippi and, you know, and then we work our way north. Which seems to be their plan anyway.
We'll ask for the paperwork and we'll get started on that.
All right.
By the way, Representative Willie Bailey, who's a Democrat in Mississippi and is also black, he says he's not opposed to the idea as long as the plate itself isn't offensive. He said, if they want a tag commemorating veterans of the Confederacy, I don't have a problem with it.
All right. Well,
okay then.
Just get a plate and put Mr. and Mrs. Peacock on it, huh? There's your Hick Watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Show.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering all around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good. How about you?
Although I guess there really is no Mr. Peacock. In any event, it's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. I'm still getting hate messages about the opening, the 24-box set for the listener. And now it's just an all cap says, oh, you're just going to ignore that, aren't you? About like the last whatever. Friend, you just got to exhale, man. You're just wrapped way too tightly. Coming up later on, we got your penis watch and so forth. Today's one of those days where I keep feeling like we got other stuff we got to do. Like I keep feeling like there's another set piece, as they say. Like we had the Joel Carter interview.
We don't have any other guests coming.
But Anna Griffin is not in today. That is next Thursday. I keep feeling like there's a thing I'm forgetting. And I'm not saying there is. I'm not trying to make it paranoid.
Do you have greatest songs? Do you have a...
No, see, that's the thing is I deliberately kind of... I deliberately didn't create anything like that for today because sometimes on interviews, either they get pushed back or forward or they run long or whatever. I'm just saying, it's not really like I'm prompting you to come up with whatever it is because I don't think there is anything. I'm just saying if it seems like I'm sort of... constantly like looking at the clock and going, well, what the hell? It's because I just got this nagging sort of great gazoo thing in my head going, but you're forgetting something. So, all right.
Well, I'd like to take this opportunity to share something. I got an email from Cheryl Kanakoa who wanted to share with me a Facebook post that I may have missed because I guess it went, somebody posted this on your Facebook page. Now, if listeners here at the Rick Emerson Show also listen to Legion of News, you'll know that we have some issues sometimes when it comes to science
yes.
facts and opinions and what have you. And so apparently someone posted on your Facebook, and Cheryl sent this to me. Rick, listening to you discuss science is like listening to the Tea Party explain government. And that's how they wrote it, government. It makes me want to throw my computer out of my third-story window. For the love of God, please quit questioning Dawn, as she is right 99% of the time. Sweet Jesus.
Okay, now here's the thing. Let me just say that in my objective assessment, that Facebooker probably had the support of the audience for the first half of his statement. The second half of the statement there is where it all just the wheels come off the wagon altogether. That's that he's completely undone by the second half of his post. I would acknowledge that I have just the most tenuous, like just the vaguest grasp of how our natural world operates. I do not, however, buy that you are right 99.9% of the time.
That might be a little high.
I think I will
concede that.
That's perhaps overstating your correctness. By the way,
we're like 75 or 80%.
Here's the thing. I will also say that there's been a drastic. This is. There's a little revisionism of history happening. This is exactly how something becomes a thing. I don't know what I was doing there. I was trying to go for
how Pol Pot came into power.
No, see, not that. I was going to say something about Elvis, but then it all just came apart in my head. So that's my instant karma, I suppose. But I was just saying, there's been some drastic revision of the text. My statements about the gas station releasing the whatever into the air. So I saw that I believe it was Andy, the formerly homeschooled man, mm-hmm. who posted this. But it just said Andy, and so I'm unclear. Yeah. And we have like 700 guys named Andy who listen to the show. And so I think he actually put it in quotes, too. I think he did that double thing of like actually just making up something and then also putting it in quotes, at which point it just becomes so hilarious that I like it's not like I really care about it. But it is interesting to watch the progression of like how the thing that I say and then like 5 days later, the thing that I am alleged to have said. It's like watching Neanderthal Man going in reverse. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
A man who stabbed his friend to death in a row. As we say in the United States, an argument.
Well, that's what friends are for.
Over a misspelled text message has been convicted of manslaughter. Neil Brook, age 33, of Wilbraham Road, Walkden, was on trial at Manchester Crown Court, accused of murdering his friend and neighbor, 27-year-old Joseph Witkowski. A jury took just over 3 hours to clear him of murder, but found him guilty of an alternative charge of manslaughter. The pair, who had known each other for 6 months, had fallen out over text messages. Brooke told police he sent Mr. Witkowski a text containing the word nutter. But, of course, because of his predictive text, it came out as mutter. Yeah, so Mr. Witkowski took offense. And after the pair exchanged a series of increasingly abusive and angry text messages, he went to Brooke's apartment. Brooke had taped up two large kitchen knives in his apartment, one on the back of his front door and one near his bathroom.
There's so much about this story I don't understand. Okay, hold on. We're going to back up for a second. We'll call them man number one and man number two. All right. Who sent the text that was supposed to read nutter but read mutter?
Brooke, the stabber.
We'll say man number one.
Yeah.
Sent text.
He sent text.
And then man number two goes to his house?
Yes.
Goes to his house. And then in the house, knives have been taped up to the door and near the bathroom.
Right.
Okay.
And then he opened the door to let man number two in, Mr. Witkowski. But Witkowski flew at him with a knife of his own. So Brooke grabbed the knife from the back of the door and stabbed Mr. Witkowski in the leg. And then he took refuge in the bathroom. Brooke continued to attack Mr. Witkowski and delivered the killing blow, stabbing him in the chest and piercing his heart.
Why were there knives taped up on the inside of the bathroom door? Was he anticipating some sort of bladed fight later in the day?
When you have a friend who gets mad at you over a text message and shows up at your house with a knife, maybe you just sort of live in a world where people are stabbing each other all the time.
Here's the thing that I don't get, because Nutter, is like crazy person.
Right.
Which, by the way, doesn't seem like an out-of-line assessment at this point. These things are always clearer in hindsight. So he means to text Nutter, basically saying like you're crazy, but then he texts Mutter. Is Mutter some sort of a British slang? Is that like a British slur? In fact, I know for a fact that Mark the Brit is listening right now.
Yeah, I don't know why saying Mutter would make you angry.
Mark the Brit, the word mutter, M-U-T-T-E-R, slur or not, please to clarify. And as somebody else notes, it's like taping weapons at different doors in the house, it's like the fight is scripted and designed to go from room to room in order. I mean, that's sort of like, it's like if you're one of those guys who has like an extra gun or something, like at a, you know, taped to your ankle because you're expecting the gang to strip search you, but they won't quite get to your shoes, and then you'll be able to pull a Derringer later or something.
Yeah.
All right. There's a lot of the story I don't understand.
I'm confused by this story.
No, it doesn't make any sense at all. All right. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. We'll revisit this later on. We'll try to have some sort of clarity put on this. By the way, I do want to thank several people now who have sent this story from KSL.com, which is the leading news outlet in Salt Lake City. Now, I was told that this girl was hot, and maybe she is. It's the unfortunate thing, though, we're on this and I'll post the link here at rickemersonshow.com in a few. It is this girl who cut off her thumb in some sort of shop accident, like a shop class accident. It looks like she might be hot, but it's that thing where there's like a YouTube video of her, and this seems to always happen to Sarah. There'll be like a YouTube video, and then when it gets posted, YouTube randomly picks one frame out of like 9 million frames in the video to use as the still. And it's always when you got like one eye shut and you're about to sneeze or something. So she looks a little awkward here, but you can tell she's all gothed up, and it's especially hot if she's a Salt Lake City girl like that. Also, she's 18. Let's see. In less than a second, the life of 18-year-old West Valley girl changed forever. Granger High School senior Kelly Day lost several fingers, not just one, fingers in a tragic accident at her school. She was in a shop class when a project cost her four fingers on her right hand.
Ah.
She says, I had my hand holding it to do a vertical cut, and it grabbed the metal and pulled my hand under the blade. Doctors saved and reattached the index or pointer finger. I've been trying to adjust my left hand because I was really I was really using that right hand, she said.
Oh.
Seems like that may have been the problem, Kelly. X-rays are a reminder of what happened. The X-rays, by the way, are badass, incidentally. I'll post those as well.
By the way, I just Googled this, and the second thing that came—the story was the first thing that came up. The second thing that came up was goldfish-crested chicken fingers recipe. So
really?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you see? Do they have a picture of the girl
not
in question?
Not in this story. I'm going to have to find.
You want to go to KSL.com.
Okay.
It's like as in Kooky Salamander or Lavender. Dot com. I don't know how those things are really supposed to work. And her name is Kelly. That's K-E-L-L-I-E. And you'll see that she's got, I mean, and again, the bar is set so much lower for being different or for being an outcast of any kind in Salt Lake. And so really, you know, the fact that she's actually gone to these, she probably doesn't look, she looks not unlike any number of people that you probably associated with in your youth. That would be my guess.
Oh, my Lord.
That's what I'm saying.
No,
yeah,
no, she's a
heavy hand with the makeup there on Kelly.
Got something going on there.
Yeah. Anyway,
the X-ray.
Yeah. Ben Horsley, the spokesman for the Granite School District, says it's really out. Listen to this. This is so great. X-rays are a reminder of what happened. Kelly's father, Glenn Day, is worried because she was looking forward to a career in designing and engineering. He's worried about medical bills. Ben Horsley, school district spokesman, says it's out of our hands.
Well said, Ben Horsley.
Awesome.
Excellent choice of words there.
Fantastic. All right, so there you go.
I've found a different story about the whole text message thing and can clear up the mutter versus nutter thing.
Yeah, because Martha Britt says, I've never heard of mutter being a nasty slang word, Governor.
Well, apparently, this is a better story. According to this story, originally what he sent in his text message is he said, "What you on about, nutter?" Where, you know, nutter being a derogatory word for somebody who's crazy.
Right.
But apparently the thing corrected it and said mutter. So he wrote, "What you on about, mutter?" And that is apparently a local colloquialism for a person who behaves in an antisocial or vulgar manner.
Well, it seems like that is probably – he stabbed the guy. It seems like this is an accurate assessment of his
apparently
of his mental
calling
state.
Someone a mutter is more offensive in this particular neighborhood than calling them crazy, which the guy apparently was.
All right, this is more of a "God damn it, autocorrect, you've ruined my life" thing as opposed to a "damn you, autocorrect."
Pretty much. Yeah.
By the way, can I just tell you?
He's also injured 140. He suffered 104 injuries, including cuts, stab wounds, bruises, and slice marks on his hands.
In this one attack, or like?
No, in this one attack. Okay. 104 separate injuries, cuts, stab wounds, bruises, and slice marks.
Speaking of "damn you, autocorrect," so I introduced that to our good friend Todd the Corpse Workoven, who said that he then lost hours of his life reading page after page of "damn you, autocorrect" screen captures, which, I mean, and the thing is, it's like impossible to really to do justice to these if you, you know, just recite them out loud. So I will just say at some point you just got to go to damnyouautocorrect.com because it's always – the great thing is that it's always the worst possible – it's the worst possible intersection of message and sender or recipient. Like this one to someone from mom, which is how she's put into the phone apparently. And where I don't know. And here's the other thing with "damn you, autocorrect" is that you – and there's it's so gloriously tantalizing yet strangely unsatisfying in that you never know the answer because you always ask yourself, what were they trying to type? You know, because very rarely, sometimes they'll do like a whole, "oh, no, 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 what I meant to say was." But very, like this, the only thing it says on the screen is "message from mom," and then it just says, "respond to my boner," with like two exclamation marks. And so you have to ask, what was she trying to type? What logical reason would she have for typing anything that was even vaguely similar to that? All right. Like the next one. "I'm so tired, I took anal all morning." No idea.
Well, the person said, "I'm in bed, just finished brushing my..."
Okay, that's Don Taylor who said that, by the way. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
What?
I'm probably going to bleep that later on, just so you know.
Really?
Just FYI. I don't wish to.
I was quoting "damn you, autocorrect."
It's not really because I'm offended. It's because you know that this will be the day that some listeners, you know, they have it going on in their cubicle, and HR is going to walk by, and they're not going to like our good friend Harper will be listening at her desk and no headphones. HR will come into the and then out comes your voice from the speakers, and not unlike Arthur Dent inadvertently triggering interstellar war, you know, or something. you're going to result in one more body on the dole. Here's Don Taylor.
So you could say. You can say boner, but you can't say the word that I just said.
Well, I'm just saying if the FCC's guidelines are any indication.
A
It's sexism, Don.
I know.
That's all I can say.
An Indiana man accidentally shot himself in the abdomen with a nail gun on Tuesday while at work remodeling his home. Eric King, 41, was at work at his home in Crawfordsville, Indiana, according to Police Chief Kurt Necht. He was reloading the tool when it went off, hitting him in the abdomen. The police department received a call at 10:39 a.m. An ambulance took King to the hospital. Necht said hospital staff reported King appeared to be in stable condition. The nail missed his vital organs, and he was transported to St. Vincent Hospital in Indianapolis to have it removed.
So it's impressive that the nail would stay inside him because, I mean, nail guns are meant to, first of all, the nails are meant to go through at the very least wood. And sometimes they have those, well, here's what they have. They have those nail guns that are where the nails actually go into concrete, which I got to use once when I was a kid. And I think that's the thing they use instead of rivets now, like instead of the thing that actually, because rivets are basically big screws. But I think instead of that, they now have these expanding rivets that you shoot into the concrete and then they're sort of wedge shaped. And then it becomes, you know, when the rivet goes in, but you can't.
So they won't come back out.
Yeah, or they've got sort of a star pattern at the end, so you can't pull them back out. And you got to figure that at the very least, though, they're meant to go through like planks and whatnot. So I mean, he's either a man of substantial carriage, or it's just or he's lucky, or it bounced off like a rib or something. Because you figure otherwise, that would just go straight out the back of you. But you know, what do I know? Here was Don Taylor.
Well, today at the Conservative Political Action Conference, Republican Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann.
Awesome.
Who is...
crazy.
She is what my grandmother would call a piece of work.
She really is.
She wants to fight for repeal of health care reform very, very badly. And she was one of the first speakers at the Conservative Political Action Conference.
We have seen President Obama usher in socialism under his watch over the last 2 years. And Obamacare is quite clearly the crown jewel of socialism.
Wow.
It's just like, the thing is, it just becomes so unbelievably, like inconceivably inaccurate that there really is... You feel like a shark trying to bite the underside of James's giant peach, you know? It's just your mouth can't fit around it. There's no way that you can have any logical response to that. The best response I ever saw to the whole Obama socialist thing was when Stephen Colbert had the guy on who was actually running for president for the Socialist Party of America. And Colbert said, "So I understand that Barack Obama's a socialist." And the guy who was actually running for president as the socialist candidate laid out why he wasn't. And that really is the only – I mean, having done that, that's kind of it. There's really no other way to rebut it. So, all right.
The Obama administration is in over its head when it comes to foreign policy, according to Newt Gingrich.
Says 1994.
The former House Speaker and possible Republican presidential candidate.
Yeah.
Spoke at the conference.
The Obama administration is wrong on terrorism, wrong on Iran, wrong on the Muslim Brotherhood, wrong on Hezbollah. And being wrong on that many national security items is an enormously dangerous thing.
Here's the thing about Newt Gingrich, though, is I sort of like him. And it's not even really sort of. I do kind of like him in terms of his persona is the wrong way to put it. But you get the sense that he at least not only believes whatever it is he's saying, but he also has thought it through and he's come to conclusions that I don't agree with. But he's also a smart guy. Like Newt Gingrich is nobody's. He's like Pat Buchanan in that way. Pat Buchanan is nobody's idea of dumb, as opposed to Michelle Bachmann, who's blindingly stupid. I mean, she's mind-bogglingly dumb.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I saw her on television. The first time I saw her on television literally was just that. I didn't even see her speak because Laura called me into the living room. She's like, "Baby, get in here, look at the television." And I went in and there was the three-panel shot on like CNBC or something. It was one of those talking head shows. And it was Michelle Bachmann, James Carville, and... God, it was somebody else who was just unbelievably strange looking. I think it might have been like a Joan Rivers type, because I think they had like a politician, a pundit, and then a comedian, and they were sort of talking about whatever the issue was. And there's Joan Rivers, who just looks, you know, freaky and scary. And there's James Carville, who looks simultaneously like some sort of an evil serpent that is halfway into achieving human form. James Carville also looks like Iron Maiden's mascot Eddie on the cover of the Peace of Mind album, incidentally. And then there's Michelle Bachmann, who looks just like some weird sort of jutting-jawed hypno-toad, where she's got – first of all, she has all of this Botox. And I think – because the thing with Botox where it gradually loosens up, but for the first couple of weeks, that's when your face is like the immobile skin mask. Is that the deal? Like, you get Botox, and it's like for that first 10 days, that's when it just doesn't move, like, at all?
Well, yeah, it freezes your muscles, basically. It paralyzes the small muscles in your face.
Because it's botulism.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then it gradually sort of, like, it doesn't just stop working all at once.
No,
it gradually just slackens out or whatever. So she apparently had just gotten some done. And she had that thing where her eyes were pulled, you know, her eyes were like bugging out a little bit because the skin had been pulled too tight. And then she just had this permanently fixed grin on her face. And this thing where her upper plate seemed to come out like about an inch and a half past her lips. It looked for all the world like she had a pair of internal metal jaws that were going to snap out at you.
Well, looks a little bit like rictus, that thing that dead bodies get where the muscles
exactly,
tighten,
they pull back.
And it looks
right,
like they're
right.
grinning.
And so you got Joan Rivers, you got Serpentor, James Carville, and then you've got Michelle Bachmann. And Lara says, which one of these people looks the craziest to you? And I swear to God, it was Michelle Bachmann. And that was before I didn't even know who she was. I'd never heard her speak. Just based on looks alone, it was like you knew that she was flat out like bat-ass crazy. And then, of course, she speaks and not just crazy, but deeply dense.
Yes.
So, all right. Newt Gingrich, though, I mean, that's a guy that I can sort of...
No, Newt Gingrich is just smart. He's just evil, but he's gleefully evil, and he seems... And like you said, he seems to, like, really, truly believe in his evil. He's like a little gnome.
Yeah.
You know, he's like an evil little gnome rubbing his hands together with glee.
He does seem to really enjoy being evil. That's the thing that I can sort of appreciate with somebody, too, when they just sort of... They just roll around in it like a dog in a freshly cut lawn.
Yeah, because you got like Cheney and Rumsfeld who are evil, but they're this sort of angry, tired kind of evil. Like they're not getting any joy out of it. Newt Gingrich just always looks like he's about to start giggling because he's so evil.
Let me ask you this about Donald Rumsfeld, because you know he's been on the TV shows a lot lately because he's got that book out, the autobiography.
Mm-hmm.
And what a great and lasting contribution that guy has made to my lexicon with the whole known, unknown, unknown, unknowns thing. I don't know what I did before the phrase known unknowns, because I use that probably 2-3 times a week in emails or something. I'll say, well, this is a known unknown. And it's a perfect way to describe something that I don't think I ever had a term for before. So it's like in that way, if nothing else, I mean, they wrecked the economy and everything, but they gave me that little word jewel. So I got
there
that going on. When you look at Donald Rumsfeld, first of all, he looks a lot like, I'll reverse this. John Spencer on The West Wing looks like the guy that they would get to play Donald Rumsfeld in the movie of his life, if only that were possible now. It's like if you were going to have a guy play Donald Rumsfeld, you would get John Spencer, who was Leo McGarry on The West Wing.
I could see that.
Also, though, when you look at Donald Rumsfeld, I'm not going to say he'd make a really good drag queen, but can't you picture him? Maybe it's just me. I can really easily picture him sitting at home like one of the Monty Python guys, the Pepper Potts, where it's like it's Graham Chapman or somebody in a wig and a dress. I can really easily picture Donald Rumsfeld at home in a dress wearing pumps and a wig, just sort of lounging around like Mother Bates. And I don't know why, and I always have been able to picture him doing that.
See, it's weird, though. I don't do that with him, but the one I do that with is Ashcroft.
Really?
Yeah, and I think it's because of that song he sang or something. But yeah, Ashcroft is one of those guys that I could totally. Whenever I see him, I think I wonder. I bet he wears ladies' underwear at home.
Well, as somebody once said, in fact, it may have been Press Secretary C.J. Craig. As you know, that 1 in 40 men is a crossdresser, and we've had 44 presidents. So you know, just do the math there. But okay, well, at least I'm not alone in having such bizarre images pop into my head. Here's Don Taylor.
Speaking of bizarre images,
did I play the second Newt Gingrich cut?
No, I only had.
The one cut from him?
Did you? Yeah, you did.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Never mind. Sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, let's do our penis watch next.
All right. Here's your penis watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Take a look at my enormous penis, and my troubles start a-melting away.
Bow, bow, bow.
I take a look at my enormous penis, and everything is going my way.
Bow, bow, bow.
I'm sorry, I just got to read this. Is it all caps? Dude, I effing shrieked from laughter at the Your Maiden Peace of Mind reference. Carville totally looks like Eddie from that cover. By the way, I would totally hate F. Bachmann, though. Not even going to lie about it. So there you go.
All right.
Here's Don Taylor.
French police said on Thursday they arrested a 63-year-old woman who was leading her 40-year-old companion along a busy shopping street by a leash attached to his exposed penis.
This is where?
In France.
Okay, well, you know, they're different there.
The couple were detained Wednesday afternoon in the southwestern city of Carcassonne and were due to appear in court in April on charges of public indecency. The couple admitted to being sex addicts and said they were in the middle of a game when they were arrested.
Okay. Well, fair enough. Do they explain the nature of the game?
No, just that she was 63, he's 40. They were walking down a busy street and...
Was the leash, when you say it was a, did they say leash or did they say twine or rope or...
It says a leash attached to his exposed penis.
I mean, how does that work, though? Because...
Well, I'm imagining probably they had one of those sort of leather contraptions.
A choke chain of some kind?
Yeah, or some kind of a ring strap kind of a device about him that had a ring on it that you could hook a leash onto.
Okay, I was going to say, because it's not like you can really just tie a knot around that thing. I mean, I guess you could,
or
but you don't
want to do that.
Or he
might have a piercing, and it might have been the leash might have been clipped to his piercing.
Hey, okay, can I ask you this about that? Okay, have you ever, let me ask you this. Have you been with a man who has a piercing there?
Once.
Okay. Now I know this sounds dumb. This makes it sound like I'm just like I don't know how these things work. But you know what? This is a thing. I'm happy to just admit I don't know. I got nothing because it's like A, I don't know. B, I haven't investigated it because I don't want to have it done. C, it's not like I go out of my way to find pictures online of guys who have metal through their junk. So if a guy has that, now is it typically through the end or is it through the middle somewhere?
Well, it depends on which kind of piercing
either.
You have.
You can get either. Because yeah. here's what I'm asking: if you think of the if you think of the if you think of the male member as being not hollow, but you know there's the sort of you know the tubing or whatever you know that goes to the middle of it, so you can you know so you can use it for its intended purpose or purposes, so you can use it for to relieve yourself. You can't be piercing that because then it's you're just going to be a, then you're just going to be a rain bird. Then you're just going to be like you're going to be like you're going to be like one of those wet willy things you put in the front yard and the kids jump around on.
Yeah.
So you can't so. How do you avoid just...
Well, see, I don't know. I know that there are piercings that go through the frenum, as it's called, or however you pronounce that, which is just the underside right...
Right toward the end?
Toward the end.
Yeah.
Also, if you have foreskin, some people have piercings in the foreskin. Fellow I was with, he actually had a barbell piercing, and it went through. And my reaction to it when I saw it, and this was many, many years ago, and I saw it, and because that was one of those weird things that we had not actually been together, and he was like, I got
Did he warn you?
He had a ton of tattoos, and I was fascinated by his tattoos. And then he was like, and then I realized he had, like, a pierced nipple, and I was going, oh, so do you have other piercings? And he's like, oh, yeah. And then he said, and I have... this piercing.
Now, when you said
and
other...
then he said, would you like to see it? And I said, because, sure.
Well, yeah.
Because I'm curious. And then I saw it and I was like, and I had so many questions, none of which were sexy. They
of
were
course.
All just things like,
clinical.
I was like, because it was like, well, who did this? Who performed this? He said, well, I had a guy who does piercings professionally. And my thought is I looked at him, I was going, but it's going through. I mean, why would you trust this guy to do that? I mean, it's not like he was a urologist.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's delicate equipment there. It's not like they're just piercing.
Yeah,
like, your earlobe doesn't have anything in it.
Because that was my first thought is, like, what if he, like, nicks your urethra
he
or something?
He sneezes or something.
You know, so, and I was like, there's no one on earth I would trust to do something like that to me.
Now, when you saw that the guy had a nipple ring and you said, do you have any other piercings? Now, clearly that's what you meant, right?
Well, and that was because I had met him working at the Renaissance Fair.
And you could see his nose and his ears.
And it started out, he had tattoos on his legs.
Right.
He had a number of tattoos on his legs. And usually if somebody has a bunch of tattoos on their legs, people don't usually start with the legs.
Right.
So that means he must have had extensive tattooing elsewhere. So I asked him about his tattoos. And then he showed me a few of his tattoos. And then I saw that his nipples were pierced. And I said, so... And I figured it was a good bet. I said, so are you pierced elsewhere as well? And he was like, yeah, you want
if
to
you
see
know
it?
What I mean.
And so and he showed it to me.
Well, because that's the thing, you know, and the thing when he was totally thinking like check and mate. Because as soon as you say, do you have any other piercings, I will guarantee you this, that he had that conversation with dozens of women and he'd figured out the strategy where they go, do you have any other piercings? And he figured out that the answer was, yes, do you want to see it?
Yes.
Because then the odds are probably 70% of the women who would ask that question in that way do want to see it.
Oh,
and
sure.
Then of them, probably 60% are going to F him. And then the ones who say no, he immediately figures, well, they're not going to F me, so therefore I can cut my losses.
Yeah.
So it's a no-lose situation.
Mm-hmm. But the most interesting part of this story to me, by the way, just as an aside, is his father, it turned out, was a rather well-known and had been for a long time nightly newscaster on a Los Angeles news station. And every time I would see that guy on TV after that, I'd be like, your son is a freak.
Your son is a pierced penis.
Yeah.
That is the sort of thing that you wonder, like, if parents, like, ever Like if your parents find out about that stuff, you know what I mean? Or like if you're a parent and like at some point because this is the sort of thing you can tell. You can sometimes, not always, occasionally you can tell if a woman has a pierced nipple, even if she's unclothed or if she's clothed, rather. You can cover, just depending on what she's wearing, whatever. That's got to be one of those things where if you're a parent and your kid comes home, like your daughter comes home and you notice that she has a pierced nipple or something, where you just kind of, you just go like, I'm not going to ask. I'm not going to think. I don't want to know. I don't want to know who did that or what else is pierced. So you get all the clinical questions for the guy. So I have like several things. First of all, was that feelable? Later on?
Yeah, actually it was.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you ask him why? Was it a thing he got like, so I'm ribbed for her pleasure or something? Or is it just because like...
Something like that, yeah. Because I had asked, apparently a girlfriend had convinced him to do it because, you know, she had heard that it was like super sexy and it felt extra good. And he was already getting things pierced and doing stuff to himself anyway, so...
Here's the thing about...
I'm not sure anyone... I really don't think anyone could ever explain adequately to me in a way that would really make sense to me why they would get their genitalia pierced.
Well...
They may have a reason that sounds good to them, but I don't think there is anything they could say that would that I would go, oh, okay, I get that.
Yeah.
There are certain places. As I've always said, I was with a bunch of friends once who all had tattoos and piercings and stuff. And because people do things like this, this girl's like, well, I had my next thing is I'm going to get my such and such pierced, you know? And everyone's like, yeah, cool, dude, because, you know, it's Portland, everybody's been cool.
Some metal mistletoe above the doorway.
And all I could say was, well, it would be like, not just above the doorway, but like basically through the doorknob, if you know what I mean. And I just said, you know, if I had to pick the 1 square inch of my body that would be the last place I would let anyone stick me with a needle, that would be it.
I have to tell you that there is, you know, women always, you know, say that they can't, women say that they sometimes cannot identify with men who cringe during things like, I don't know, a penis watch where a guy gets his business taken off by like, by an ads or something, or just, you know, there's like, or a plastic cutting machine that just whittles his willy down and, you know, and Big Jim and I go, ah! And I don't mean Big Jim is in my penis. I mean Big Jim Willig and I go, ah! And women say, oh, you know, I just, you know, I can't imagine what it's like to be a guy and to cringe every time you hear one of those stories. I have found that the equivalent for that for a woman is disgusting, as you said, yes. Piercing the because it, so
we can say clitoris. It's a word.
But it's funnier if I say if I try to come up with something else because then because then it forces me here
your tiny clown's nose or something. I don't know. I was trying to think of a word for
what
it.
Kind of clowns you're hanging out with. This explains a lot, though. explains many of your fears and interests. I was going to say it's funnier then because it also forces me to then, if I'm going to be consistent linguistically, it forces me then to come up with strange ways of describing everything else. Because I was going to say that I knew a woman one time who had the metal mistletoe above the door. but then I was going to describe it as being above the door because I was going to say the thing that I don't get though, and where she drew the line, she had the mistletoe above the door. But sometimes, like, if you've got doors, at home that are maybe facing a balcony, and there's that little latch that goes down over both doorknobs to keep them from blowing open, and it's, there are women who have that, where it's the doors are held shut. By a fastener. Okay. And I don't get that because that seems like one of those things that if you snag that at the wrong moment or on the wrong thing, then the door gets blown open, by hurricane force winds. And that's no good.
Yeah. One of the few times I was actually in my car many years ago listening to Dr. Drew when Adam Carolla was on with him, they got a call from a guy who was talking about how he had gotten his lip piercing.
Right.
Snagged on his girlfriend's intimate piercing and ended up having to like, you know, I think something got torn. And I was like,
I don't know if it was the same woman or not, but I did know a woman who got her nipple ring caught on a bed sheet or something. And it didn't tear out, but she said that like she went to turn over and she was like, oh, ah! You know, and then, but she said she actually got it removed because she said the thing that It didn't tear, but she said that for the rest of like the time she had it, she was haunted by the idea that could have happened, that it could have just gotten taken completely out.
Yeah.
Did you find it's probably wrong to ask if you found it alluring, because I think that the male physique or male body is probably not alluring to women the same way that the female form is alluring to men.
Well, yeah, no, it's different. I mean, the thing is, I was very interested in this young man in a purely carnal sense.
Yes.
He was covered with tattoos and he had weird piercings and he was like about 8 years younger than I was. And I certainly, wasn't looking to make him my boyfriend.
Right.
So, I think he was alluring to me in a similar way to the way that young ladies are sometimes alluring to men. He was basically just a big, good-looking hunk of meat with a whole bunch of tattoos. And I was going to get whatever was available to me from this experience. And there was part of me that, a lot of the reasons I've gotten myself into certain awkward situations over the years is because I do have a tendency to go, ooh, here's something I haven't done before.
Pretty thing.
I'll do, yeah. Oh, weird piercing? Okay, I'll be able to check that off the list.
Yeah, see, and I guess I was just sort of, I was projecting my, I think I was projecting my preferences onto you because I was thinking that, because to me, like the whole huge, like the illustrated man thing, the whole, or illustrated, like chicks who have tons of tattoos, that is a big turnoff to me. I'm not saying like it's an absolute deal breaker, but I mean, a girl's got to be really, really good looking to get past the fact that she's covered in tattoos.
For me, honestly, it's so horrible, but I'm such a snob. I'm such an aesthetic snob about everything that if somebody has a bunch of tattoos, and I haven't been with many men that have had numerous tattoos, but like I'm really turned off by people who have bad tattoos.
Yeah.
Like if they're really unattractive and I just think, really, you paid for that? You thought that's what you asked for? Really?
Just like a skull covered in fire.
But his tattoos were well done, but also he was like 19 years old and he was like 6'3" and he had a weird piercing. It was like, what was I to do, Rick Everson?
Well, see, and that's,
what was I to do?
And that's the thing. I think that's why it's so painful sometimes for guys to see. And again, it's not like I'm opposed to tattoos. I'm not even opposed to several or many tattoos. But especially in Portland. I mean, not just in Portland, but here in Portland, you do see, like, there's this, I would say one of the, I mean, you'll say a ludicrous statement is at one of the Bishop's barbershops, there's a girl with a lot of tattoos. Every girl at every Bishop's barbershop has tons of tattoos. But there is at one of the locations, there is a girl who really is, you can tell that it is, and nothing wrong with it, I don't care, but you can tell it obviously has reached some sort of, she's one of those people who is about tattoos the way that other people about whatever, where it's a lifestyle, obviously. It is like her, it is her thing. It is what she does. And they are like, I'm not just head to, I mean, I was going to say not just head to, but literally head to toe. I mean, like her face and her neck all the way down to the tops of her feet, which seems like it must just freaking hurt, by the way. But every inch of her that you can see that is visible is tattooed. And I just think that's just, because I guess if you're unattractive to begin with, that's not going to make you more attractive. And if you are attractive to begin with, then guys look at it like some guy doodling on a Picasso. You know, it's like somebody's just taking a great painting. Go, you like this painting? Let me spray paint right across the top of it.
Well, I did. The same evening that I was hanging out with the people and the girl was talking about the piercing she was going to get next, there was a fellow there that I'd never met before. And that was one of those moments when I had one of those moments when I heard my mother's voice in my head, because he was really good looking, really, really an attractive fellow who was probably about 20 in his early 20s. And in fact, he looked a lot like a young Rick Springfield. Really pretty and that good looking. But the thing is, he had all of these piercings in his face and like his ears. His ears had like about 12 things, and he had piercings in his nose, and he had like four or five things under his lip, and he had like six things in his eyebrows. And I looked at him, and with no irony whatsoever, I was just sitting there looking at him across the table and thinking, he would be such a nice-looking young man if he just didn't have all that crap in his face.
Right. Well, I mean, because that's the thing. Because you're just you're thinking you had something perfectly good there. Now you're just effing with it.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing that everybody mentions. Everybody makes this joke, but nobody has ever really. This is the thing we ought to try to find at some point. Everybody says, but what are they going to look like when you're 70? There's got to be somebody out there who is 70 and covered in tattoos. I really want to know. Mm-hmm. Because everybody talks about, well, those kids at the Lollapalooza, it's not going to be so amusing at the retirement home when your Jane's Addiction tattoo is down at your ankles, will it? But, I mean, in all reality, does anybody know what that actually looks like? I mean, I'm not saying it looks great, but nothing looks great when you're 70.
I know there was a Matt Groening cartoon years ago with these two just withered, just wrinkly, nasty-looking guys sitting in wheelchairs. One's on, like, an oxygen tank, and they're covered in, like, piercings and tattoos. And the one old man is saying to the other one, yeah, I was an idiot when I was young, too.
See, maybe am I the only – the reason maybe I'm skeptical that it looks so bad is because the only roadmap I have for this, the only evidence I've ever seen of the way that this looks is – the old guys who were on my neighborhood, on my block when I grew up, and they were all guys who'd gotten like tattoos in the Navy and stuff. It was like this guy who lived across the street from me, he'd gotten his tattoos in World War II, which he did occasionally call WW2, which is awesome. This guy named Earl.
He didn't call it the big one?
He called it WW2, and he did in fact say, get off my lawn. And that's one of the great things is that I got to hear that phrase before it became a thing. But this guy, Earl, who lived across the street, he would not actually just say get off my lawn and stay off my lawn. He would then threaten what he was going to do to us. He'd say, you stay off my lawn or I'll take those bikes away from you. And which is the sort of thing that you can get away with if you're an old guy, and also it's 30 years ago, and you can just threaten parental action even though, like, he's just some guy. But he had all of these tattoos that he got when he was in the Navy in WW2. And occasionally, and he was one of those guys, it was like, you know, not a bodybuilder, but one of those guys who like stayed in, you know, those Robert Mitchum guys who like stayed kind of in a sort of beefy kind of shape to the end of his life, probably. And he'd be up mowing the lawn in the hot summer sun with like a wife beater on. And you'd see these like bulging, you know, biceps with the Navy tattoo. And he was like 70 something. And you just look at it and he still looked like a badass. And so maybe that just varies from person to person. Now, granted, it's not like your shoulder sags a lot as you get older, like a bosom, perhaps, which...
I've thought about getting, because I have one tattoo, and I've thought about getting a second tattoo, and I'd like, because the tattoo I have is on my shoulder blade on the back, so I can't ever see it. Mm-hmm. I just know it's there. It's sort of like, you know, I crossed that divide at one point where it was like, before I was a person who did not have tattoos.
Right.
And after that, it's like, now I'm a person who has a tattoo, you know, but I can't ever see it. So it's like, I have a big burn scar on my forearm from when I was a chef. And I've thought about getting something on my arm covering the scar, and then I would be able to see it. But on the one hand, I have no idea what that would be. And then I start thinking about, I'm already middle-aged. Do I want to go into my elderly years as somebody who has a big tattoo on my arm? You know? So, and I really am still torn about it. I just keep thinking, really like to get like a cool tattoo. And then I think, you know, Don, you're damn near a senior. You got that AARP card in the mail, for God's sake. Isn't it time that you maybe think time for tattoos has passed?
And look, I only mean this in the actual – I don't mean this how it sounds, but – at your age, which is also like basically my age even, you know, and I'm decades younger than you. But you pass a certain point, though, and it's like here's the thing. Like, I've thought about – I don't have my ears pierced, and one of my ears strangely looks like it is pierced, and it's not. It's just like a little indentation that I have for some reason. But people are always say, well, you're not – you know, you're not wearing an earring. And I always say, no, it's not pierced. And every now and again, I would just sort of toy with the idea of getting my ears pierced for some – I don't know why, just because I figured like the clock was ticking if I wanted to do that. But it's like I sort of just waited the clock out, and that time has elapsed. And now it's like I'm going to be – I mean, you know, like next month I am having yet another goddamn birthday. And so like I'm going to be – I'm not, as William Holden said, nearer to the end than the beginning, but I'm certainly nearer to 40 than I am to 30, and going to be more so next month. And it's like then I'm just like a 40-year-old guy getting his ears pierced. And it's – they got a name for that, you know. There's a way they could describe that guy.
Somebody sent me a picture of a naked old woman covered in tattoos.
Well done.
And I opened it.
Yeah.
Like a fool, yes. I clicked on it. You don't want to be Harrison Ford and be like action grandpa and then suddenly get a tattoo because you now have like a girlfriend who's a third your age.
Yeah, and so I've just missed the, you know, plus it's not just that, I would have to get both of them pierced because I think now no longer do you get one ear pierced. Not because it like, you know, says you, you know. Because there was that whole, what did George Carlin say? If it's in this year, you're gay. If it's in this year, you hump water buffalo or something. But it's also just like it's dumb. If you're going to get one, if a guy with just one earring and one ear is a dirtbag, I'm not saying you can't be a dirtbag with two earrings. But one guy with, you know, a guy with one earring in, that's just a guy who hangs out at the bowling alley and sells weed to teenagers. So you have to get both ears pierced. And then it's like I'm just some morning show DJ, you know, at the rock station who's trying to, like, you know, then I am the guy that I don't ever want to be, which is the guy who's playing Nickelback records and, you know, trying to be one of the kids, got my ears pierced or whatever. And I can't. So it's like guys, women are probably this way as well, but men pass several ages where I was talking to Greg Nibbler about this because I don't think Greg has any piercings or tattoos. He might. He might have tattoos. He was in a band. You know how that. You know those guys are. So he may have tattoos. I just don't know. But you know, like when a guy passes the age of like 25, you know, that's when the guy says like, I will never be a professional athlete. And when a guy passes the age of like 30, he starts to think, you know, certainly 35, you think I'm never going to be a rock star.
Yeah.
Guy passes the age of like 40, he's like, I'm probably not going to be a movie star. And so for me, it's like I just – the things that I did not do like that, I think I've missed the – for good or bad, I've missed the window for doing those. And plus, like the tattoo thing especially, I can't think of anything – I can't think of anything that I like enough that I would want to like make it an irremovable part. Because all of the irremovable features are that I already have, I don't like. So, you know, it's like why would I add more things about my body that I can't get rid of and don't want to see? No, thank you. Thank you, no.
I can see that.
I will say this, though. Piercings on a chick, hot. And I don't just mean in the lady area. I mean, it's an all-over thing.
Yeah, I had a boyfriend once who was encouraging me to get a nipple piercing. And I was actually kind of into the idea until I did a little bit of research into it and started reading things like, you know, well, yeah, but when it heals, it could twist.
It could scab.
Well, and also, and when I read the thing where it said, and it could, basically, you know, destroy sensation in the area.
Oh, I don't want that.
And I'm like, you know, I like the sensation that I have there now.
No, thank you.
You know, and then I just started thinking about how, you know, I'm always like dropping things on myself and knocking things over and I'm clumsy. I was like, really, do I want something that can catch on something there?
Well, and like, here's the thing. If you get that pierced, isn't there like, there's got to be like 2 or 3 days where you like can't even leave the house because what if somebody opens a door into you?
Oh, yeah. You got to put on like a bra with the front cut out so that nothing is rubbing against it.
A nursing bra.
You know, for like a week. And it was like, yeah, and the whole thing, just the more I read about it, the more I went, oh,
well,
heck,
the guys who get their junk pierced. It's like, wouldn't you just stay on the couch for like a month? I mean, even after the period of time went by where they said, like, you're fine. Like, I think I would be unnerved to have relations once I had that done because the first dozen times you do that, I think you got to imagine, it's like you hear about those guys that have heart surgery. And it's like they said that, you know, the biggest problem for guys having heart surgery is achieving and maintaining a state of arousal. Not because they can't, but because they are just so consumed with the fear that like their heart is going to like fall out of their chest the first time they have sex or something after heart surgery. And so it's just so distracting. I can't even imagine how distracting it would be if like a guy had just pierced you with like a little, you know, like a metal spear.
Well, yeah, I think that's why you get these things done when you're young.
Yeah,
because,
no.
You know, it's much harder to damp a young man's ardor than an older gentleman's.
All right, I got two stories I can tell to close this whole thing out. One involves a stripper that I used to talk to when I was a cashier at 7-Eleven in San Diego. The other involves a woman I knew who did piercings of an intimate nature on men.
Wow. Which do you think will be more educational?
The latter.
Well, let's do that one.
All right. So she was a woman. She was a friend of a friend. A fof, as Jan Brunvand says. And so we were like at her, I forget why. It's like my friend had to stop by and get like borrow money from her or get her car keys or something. And so we're there at this, it was a tattoo and piercing place, those places they sometimes multitask. And she was, I don't know, she was like giving the girl like a belly piercing or something. And so, you know me, I just can't help myself. And I start asking questions. Like I just long ago passed that event horizon where I don't even try to be sort of subtle or tactful. I just ask really blunt, brusque sort of, you know. So tell me about schlongs.
Well, like me with the guy. Of course I'd like to see it. Really, who did that for you? How much did that cost?
Right.
How do you decide that that's the thing you're going to get? Yeah.
And I just figure like life is too short. So I just say, so you know, guys come in here and they get their business pierced too. And she said, yep. And I said, so is that is that weird? Like for you as a woman, you're just seeing like a parade of penises coming in, you know, like maybe not all day, but I mean some days, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them at a time. She says, yeah, it's kind of strange. And I said, well, what? Like how do the – I mean, are the guys nervous about it? Do they get weirded out when you're going to put a metal part through their area? And she says, well, they don't really get nervous. She says a lot of them – and then she paused while she was – she goes, a lot of them get the opposite of nervous. And I said, what? Ooh, really? And suddenly all of her voices got lower and I said, so really they become aroused sometimes if you're piercing? And it was weird because it wasn't like she was being bothered by the questions, but it was, you could tell that it was just old hat for her. And she just continued piercing them. She goes, yep, happens all the time. And I said, so, and I paused and I said, so if a man comes in to get his piercing down there and he is aroused, I said, and then you can't obviously just like wait forever. You got to get the piercing done at some point. I said, so while you're while he's being touched there, does he ever achieve fulfillment of arousal? And she said, sometimes. And I said, well, what do you do then? And she said, that's an extra $50. And she just kept going on. And the way that she said it, you could tell that that was not a joke.
Yeah.
And it probably wasn't even legal for her to joke. But that was a thing where she probably at those moments, because it's not like she's trying to do something sexual. But it's like I think at that moment she realizes that the guy is putting her and him in such an awkward situation that his embarrassment is worth any amount of money to him just to be rid of it.
You think she tells him that'll be $50 beforehand? Like,
I don't think so.
If you know what have you, that's going to be $50.
No, I think it was the deal. Like, I think it was that. I think once the fat lady would sing, that she would say, "Oh, and that's going to be $50 extra for the." And then she probably just sort of like looks down and points a little bit and goes and arches an eyebrow and he goes, "Sure, yeah, 75 even. Call it good." So there you go. Yeah, she clearly had answered that question, or you know, many times, because I can't be the only person who was just sort of which. Mm. And I don't get that. That
see,
is
my thought is I'm thinking. My thought would be, does that make her job more difficult then? Because, because the skin will be more taut.
Oh, you mean in terms of actual physical execution? Yeah. I thought you meant just in terms of ickiness.
Well, of course it does in terms of ickiness, but in terms of the actual, you know, mechanics of doing
just,
the piercing.
If it's just the underside, I would imagine, you
because
know,
it
only
would be where it wherever yeah. they're having it done, I guess.
I will say that the woman I knew who had the piercing down below, the above the down below. Uh-huh. What did you call it? Through the doorknob?
Yes.
Whatever. She said something really interesting. She said that while getting that piercing, she did not achieve the full fulfillment. She said, but she said something actually really sort of intriguing. She said, "Well, that didn't happen to me, but I can understand how it would." And here's the thing: I don't even own one of those, and I don't understand how that would. I mean, you probably can speak to that more than I. But that's the thing: like, yeah, as you said, of all the places in my body where you're going to just spear something, no,
yeah,
I'm going to.
No,
and by the way, this message says, "I'm turning 30 on Sunday. F my life. I've given up on my dreams. I'm going to keep playing guitar in the closet and weeping." Here's the thing.
Our representative listener, ladies and gentlemen.
But really, of all the people to say, F my life, I'm turning 32. A guy who's about to turn, you know, like 40. Just you know.
I'm 73 years old. And
stop that.
I didn't even start doing this until this last year, so, you know.
Let's see. And just back on something else, this is the girl in Salt Lake who got her hands taken off by the thing in shop class. As an industrial worker who has seen a man's hair ripped half out of his head, one death, and my own finger being cut off, metal shop truly is vicious. Those machines don't care about your flesh. Didn't Big Jim's girlfriend say that she actually got a finger lopped off at one point?
Maybe.
I think she did. I don't think you were here for the conversation, though, because I think it was Greg and Sarah. I might have mentioned it. Malia, I think she has – how do I put this? The fingers are real, but the bone almost is not. It's like she has the Terminator hand on the inside. Like, two of her fingers are like – it's like a the bones, the skeleton are – it's like partially metal.
Oh.
Because her fingers got lopped up. And I think she said, if I'm remembering this conversation correctly, that there is – she actually possesses security cam footage of the fingers being cut off by a table saw.
Wow.
Because she's operating a table saw and like feeding him through, whoomp, and then off come these fingers. And so I think that the fingers are back on, and I think the skeleton is the bones are still there, but they are partially or substantially metal or wire or something. And she said that she actually has the videotape of her cutting off her own fingers, and she'll throw it on occasionally at parties when she's good and liquored up. All right. By the way, the guy who was going to be crying in his closet, he's turning 30. And I said, you know, I'm not complaining and I'm going to be 40. He says, yes, but I had real dreams and talent. Thank you.
Well, that's nice.
Appreciate that. Thanks so much. All right. Here's Dawn Taylor.
So yesterday we were talking about to Kelly Clark about Valentine's Day coming up and the meat bouquet that you can purchase here in Portland.
Oh, I'm going to make a note to myself. Nobody tell my wife. That's okay. What I'm getting.
Well, here's another idea for Valentine's Day. If you go to the Bronx Zoo's website, that would be www.bronxzoo.com, They have a limited offer at this time as a fundraiser for the zoo that they have 58,000 Madagascar hissing roaches. And for $10, you can name one.
Really?
After yourself or a loved one.
You named a roach after me?
Yes. And they have this lovely website, which I will turn around. You go to bronxzoo.com/name-a-roach. They have a picture with roaches and hearts.
How much is it?
$10.
Okay, I'm totally doing that too.
And it says, can't decide what to get that special someone for Valentine's Day? Sometimes the answer is all around us and right where it's been for millions of years. Like cockroaches.
And you can do it online?
You do it online.
I'm totally doing that today.
Yep. And then they said, we'll send a truly memorable certificate of honor to that certain someone explaining that there's a special insect living at the Bronx Zoo with his or her name on it.
I am absolutely getting that for Valentine's Day. I should name one after her mother, too. You know, so Mother's Day comes around. My mother-in-law has a little something special. So, yeah, the meat bouquet and naming a roach. Right there.
Right there.
And see, so then it's comedic, but it's also, you know, but the other thing is comedic and usable.
Right. And plus, and you have helped support the wildlife conservation, whatever they are, society in their Bronx Zoo.
There's that, but also you ladies know what I'm talking about. Where the thing about this is, it's not just Valentine's Day, but it's any occasion like this. And I'm not saying men aren't this way, but I think women are more so, generally speaking, where it's all about being able to tell the women that you work with about the thing that your husband or boyfriend got you that is different from what their significant others got them. So you can say, like, look, my boyfriend, girlfriend got me whatever, and it's more interesting or unique or shinier or whatever than, like, whatever it is they got. That's what it's all about. It is all about, like, look, who received the shiniest object for their – who got the best twig for their nest? It was me. And so this is like that bird that figured out that it could be threading, like, aluminum foil or whatever it was into their nest that we talked about a few weeks ago. This, the aluminum foil for the Rick Lara nest. Awesome. Fantastic. Let's do that today.
There you go. Let's do our corpse watch.
I wonder if there's going to be a run on them now. Here's your corpse watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. By the way, somebody asked, I guess email says, you mentioned Big Jim Willig. Two things. It says, A, isn't Tom Likas' penis named Big Jim? Yes, it is. So that's awkward. And he says, B, what will Big Jim's, who will he be talking about tomorrow? What is his subject? Tomorrow he'll be talking about Mel Brooks for Humor Me Comedy 101. Tomorrow, Big Jim Willig talking about the comedy of Mel Brooks.
Why would Tom Likas name his penis Jim?
I don't know. His testicles have a collective name. Would you like to know?
Well, sure, why not?
It's Tom Likas' manhood. This is a conversation I'd never thought I'd be having. Yes, they are a Big Jim and the Twins.
Oh.
There you go. Okay. Here's your corpse watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Zoom in things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
Here's Don Taylor with your corpse watch.
Unable to get into her new apartment, a Portuguese woman called the cops, who busted down the door and found the corpse of the previous owner on the kitchen floor. The property at Sintra in the Lisbon suburbs was sold by auction after the elderly owner apparently disappeared in 2002. Neighbor Ada Martins, 82, said she became concerned after mail started to pile up, but police did not want to force the door. Eventually, the authorities stepped in and put the apartment up for sale, but apparently no one ever went inside. The new owner called the police when she was unable to get into the property, and they forced the door open and found the woman's corpse. And the skeletal remains of the woman's dog were also found beside her.
Well, you'd like to think that the dog, you know, probably died a natural death after consuming the woman for many years. How long was she there, do they think?
I don't know. It didn't say, but it was a corpse and a skeletal dog.
So, yeah, a long time, you would have
been. It's been a while.
So, you know.
Well, the woman disappeared in 2002.
Okay.
So it's been like 9 years.
Okay, so the dog probably did live a long and healthy life, having many, many meals made of the thing it loved most, you know, in life. I have to say this. Here's a weird thing. I totally forgot about this. So I was talking to my mom's when I was – see, now I've just totally fallen into that guy. And I was – first it was the thing – first it was ironic, and now I'm just saying it like a douche. But I was talking to my mom when I was in Kennewick a few weeks ago, and so the – guy who, and I don't know, did you grow up in like a suburban, like a residential street?
Yeah.
So you had like a, did you, was it a place where you knew your next door neighbors?
Yeah.
Because, you know, some neighborhoods, it's like you just don't know the guy next door. You like, you don't want to know from them and they don't want to know from you. But I grew up in, you know, a kind of a, not a like a Brady Bunch place, but I mean, very much a residential, like a suburban street. And so there were the neighbors that were on either side. And it was like one of those towns where like nobody ever moved either. Like there was no getting a bigger or better house in a different part of town because it's in Kennewick. You're still in the same goddamn sewer of a city. So what does it matter? So the neighbors who lived on the other side of me growing up, I just knew forever and ever and ever. Turns out, so the guy who lived at the left or whatever of us when I was growing up, same thing. Killed himself at one point, like in the kitchen, just a couple years back. And then was just there for like 9 months and nobody noticed. And my mom told me, not sort of, you know, it wasn't like she was happy about it, but it was just one of those like she was talking about. It was like she was describing the weather. She's like, well, you know, it's been kind of hot here. It was cold for a while, but then it's hot. Also, they found Mr. Smith next door. Yeah, he'd been dead for a year in his house, and nobody knew until they busted down the door, and he was just dead at the kitchen table for a year. Do you want to go to Applebee's? And it was like weird. It was like in this long like it was like a New York Times like ticker screen of news, you know, from Kennewick. You know. By the way, here's a truism.
Okay.
Here's the thing. Speaking of Applebee's, I have noticed. So when I was, I never told this. I didn't really give a full recap on going back to Kennewick. Because why? Like, what is the point of that? So I was back there a few weeks ago, and so I went to get a haircut because it's like I had Outlook Portland or something, and I wasn't going to get a chance to do it when I came back. And so I went to get a haircut, and first of all, I don't know if I regret this or not, but it's the thing where like you're sitting in a small town. And you're talking to the woman who's going to be cutting your hair, some woman who's probably named Tiffany with an I at the end of it. And she cuts your hair, and then she gets like two questions in where she says, like, so what do you do for a living? Where do you, you know, are you from here? And I must carry some vibe that says, like, I'm not from here, because every time I go anywhere in Kennewick, I get that question. It doesn't matter what I'm doing. It could be at Payless, doesn't matter. And the woman behind the register will always ask me if I'm from there. And then I say no. And she says, what do you do? And I say, well, it's a radio show and I do some stuff in, you know, Portland. And then I swear to God, this is not really what I was going to mention. But the first question, how are you today? Fine. Second question, are you from here? No. Third question, where are you from? Portland. What do you do? I do a radio show. And, you know, she says, is that fun? I say, yes, it is. And then she goes immediately to, do you have kids? Which I think is a sort of shorthand way of asking two questions or three questions at once, which is asking if I'm maybe if I'm attached or and then also finding out if I want to have kids and then also maybe just sussing out my general whatever desirability is like like a mate or something. Why would you ask a guy if he has kids?
I don't know.
Anything else.
I'm a woman and people ask me that. I think I've always thought people ask me that just because I'm a woman. But I think people just ask that. I don't know. I mean, I'll meet people at a store or whatever. It's like, hi, how you doing? And you're like, fine, having a good day, yeah. And then out of nowhere, it'll be like, you know, what are you doing? You go to work. And then that's like, you got kids? And I'm just like,
so maybe
why do you care?
Is it because they're looking for a point of relatability? Maybe. Because maybe they have kids? Because I immediately assumed it's because she was trying to seduce me.
Who have children, yeah, they just want to know if other people have children. Maybe because then they realize that, you know, other people are miserable too or something. I have no idea.
Come whitewash this fence with me. But anyway, so I said, no, you know, I don't have kids. And I kind of travel a lot or used to anyway for my work, you know, place to place and whatever. And I said, but I try to come back here every now and again to visit my mom and whatever. And she said this thing, and this is the thing I've learned. The smaller the town, the greater the chance that this will be said in conversation. The smaller the town, the greater the likelihood is that the person will say, well, you know, we really are growing a lot recently. I mean, there's a lot of things coming to the town, and that's never true because it's always they got like a second Red Robin or something, or there's gonna be a Walmart super center put in, and that is always a sign that the town is on the move. It's on its way upward. They're kicking the dirt off their heels, and they're going to become a large metropolis. Tiny towns can't wait to tell you that they're becoming big.
Yeah, the last time I was in my hometown, I stopped at the liquor store to buy booze. Because,
says everything.
You know, right there. That tells you a lot. And the woman at the counter said, did you go to aviation high school? And I said, yeah. And it turned out apparently we had gone to school together. And I had no idea who she was. I didn't recognize her. And then she's like, oh, what are you doing? I was like, well, I did this and I did this and I moved to Portland and I live in Portland now. And now I'm back for this, whatever. And I said, how about, she said, like, oh, I married. And she tells me this guy's name who apparently was her boyfriend in high school. And they've never left.
Of course.
And I just, I just looked at her and I just felt like, you know, just kill yourself.
Get in the trunk of my car. I'll take you away.
Just seriously, like, wow. I've got four kids and, you know, we own the liquor store and I'm just like,
God damn.
And I'm like, and you never left.
Do you ever do this? You ever go back to your hometown? And it's not like I, you know, and like I said, I go back there basically. I go there. I go straight to my mom's house. I hang out for a while. Laura and I will go to the mall once because that's the only thing to do there. And then we go back home and then I eat, I nap, and I come back to Portland. But you ever, like, be in your hometown and you'll see somebody that you knew, you know, maybe not well, but just somebody that, like, you recognize him, you go, ah, it's that guy. And you can tell that he's, you know, especially if it's not, like, at the holidays, if it's just during the regular year, you can tell he probably still lives there, probably never left, has become some spongy, bloated, horrible waste of a human. And then you get gripped by the fear. Like, you're like, I got to get out of this place because it keeps people here. You feel like you're in some sort of roach motel filled with sticky maple and you're never going to get to leave.
Well, my hometown is weird because it's in Southern California and it's on the beach. And when I grew up, it was very much just a suburban community. And there was some money there, but it was middle class money. It was like the people with money worked as engineers at TRW and Hughes Aircraft. And that was where the money was. And then there was a big Texaco tank farm where they stored like crude oil and gasoline and stuff. And they tore that down and built a big gated community of expensive homes and a country club and a shopping mall with like really expensive stores. And so it became like all the housing prices just went through the roof and more people moved there. And then now it's like an incredibly wealthy town. And there's actually TV and movie production facilities in town. So I'll see, like, you know, something like The O.C. or something. It'll say filmed in Manhattan Beach, California. I'm like, what? Because, you know, I think apparently where there used to be a Mattel toys factory when I was growing up. And I think that's the piece of property that got sold and they turned it into sound stages. And so
actually is becoming an interesting place.
So it has actually become an interesting place, I guess. But
not why she stayed, though.
But I don't remember it as being particularly interesting. It was nothing but, you know, it was nothing but suburban homes and pain and childhood and adolescence
well,
for me.
Even if it has become an interesting place,
it wouldn't have been interesting to me when I was 10.
Well, and she wouldn't know that presumably because she's never left. She has no point of comparison or reference. Every once in a while when I have to go back to Provo, there's this one coffee shop. I shouldn't. There's more than one, but there's a primary coffee shop in Provo in Orem, which is where you go because it's not like you can just get coffee in every corner. So there's this one sort of like espresso place kind of in the middle of town that you go to. And of course, by definition, if you're working at the espresso house, you are not a member of the church. You're not Mormon. So that is a thing. It's like that thing that, you know, things you can tell just by looking at her. If a girl or a guy, somebody works at an espresso place in Salt Lake, there's a lot of things you know about them immediately.
Not Mormon.
Yeah, yeah. Probably not. And either not Mormon and or not from here.
Although, to be fair, one of the guys in my Mormon book club apparently worked at like a Starbucks in Provo.
Well,
when he was Mormon, he just didn't actually drink coffee. Apparently, there's no problem with like slinging the coffee to others. He just didn't drink it himself.
A great number of the dealers in Vegas are Mormon. They're all Mormon or Asian or both sometimes because Mormons are apparently a very valued employee because they're trusted. Right. Rightly or wrongly, they're viewed as being some of the most trustworthy employees you can have.
That's why Howard Hughes hired them as
the Mormon Mafia.
Mormon Mafia.
That's right. But we went to this coffee shop and there's this girl behind the counter. She's like in her mid-20s or something, and I don't know, I think she did have that, like, you know, not cut from the same cloth look. And Laura and I were having this conversation with her, and we said, so are you from here? And she was from some place that wasn't like much better. It was Wyoming or something. And she said, no, I'm from Wyoming. So, well, okay, you're from Wyoming, like how did you end up in Orem, Utah? And she said, well, I was, you know, looking for places to you know, to go to school, and it was like something generic that she was going to school for, veterinary school or something. And she said, so I picked Provo because I thought it'd be interesting. And we said, and is it? She said, no. And then she just sort of, and then she kind of looked down at her shoes and just sort of like kicked the ground a little bit. And it was like, and we were there for, I think, 3 or 4 days, and every single day. And she said, where are you from? We said, Portland. She goes, oh, and she kind of perked up. She goes, oh, I hear Portland's really great. And we're like, it is great. You should come home with us. You know, we did everything but just saying, like, we'll pay your way. And every day I would go there like once or twice to get coffee or whatever. And every day, Laura and I would, and she probably thought we were some creepy like swinger couple or something. But we just said like, I think at
you
one point.
You can come live with us.
I think.
We have a basement.
We have some. Nah, never mind.
We just bought a swing.
Do you mind if we call you Janice, though? And we have some clothes already made that you can wear. The room's already made up. But every day we would talk to her, and I think Laura said that, because I went home a couple days before Laura, because I had to get back to work. But Laura said, I think the last day she was there, that she basically just came out and said, like, there are better places. Like, you don't have to live here. You can live somewhere else. Like, you know, it doesn't take. Is that? It's like the thing when you watch The Wire, and I know I'm comparing Orem, Utah, to Baltimore, which could not be more ludicrous. Yet in some ways, it is the same, and that's not as dumb as it sounds. Because in any place that is small and insular, and where there is a very, and to say that the Mormon culture is dominant, like in Salt Lake, actually, Mormons are the minority. There are more Catholics in Salt Lake than there are Mormons. Now, it doesn't really matter in some ways because the legislature is 98% Mormon, so the laws are all the church. It is a de facto theocracy. But in Salt Lake, you know, it's not like everywhere you go you're just tripping over Mormons. But if you go to Provo or Orem, which is where BYU is located, I mean, to say that that is a – to say that the church dictates and is inseparable from the culture of that city is to understate it to a massive degree. I mean, it's unreal. It is like – I won't even say that it's a bad place because that's all relative. It's like you said about movies. There's no bad comedies, I guess, but it is a place like nowhere I've ever been, and I can't imagine just living there and just being a non-member or just being, you know, whatever, just being somebody who wants to have any sort of a colorful life.
It's very, very difficult to make that break and change your life, though. And I mean, you know, you've moved around a lot and you've taken a number of jobs in different places. And I don't know if you remember what it was like that very first time.
Oh, it's really bizarre. Because, even a place you want to leave, it's difficult.
Because I spent, you know, the first two-thirds of my life in the Los Angeles area, and all of my friends were there. And when I told people I'm moving to Portland, Oregon, the most common response was just this blank stare. And they go, why?
Just
the
just
idea that, like, why would you not – why would you leave L.A.? And most of the people I knew who left L.A. moved to San Francisco.
Right.
That was the big change. Like, I got to get the hell out of L.A. I'm going to move to San Francisco. And I was just like, I just, you know, I got to get the hell out of Los Angeles.
Leave California altogether.
Yeah, and it was like, and sort of like, well, come to San Francisco. It's like, no, really, no. No. I've been to Portland, Oregon, and
right. It
suits me. I'm going there.
And see, that's the thing is, like, once you were here and you saw it, you went, I'll come here. This is it. And living in any sort of a town that has a very strident or dominant or powerful culture, whether it's L.A. or Baltimore or Orem, which all in their own ways have their own kind of language and lexicon and behavior and peer system and social pressure. But it's like when you watch The Wire and you'll see this even more as you get further into the are you watching season two?
I am watching season two.
You get, what's his name? Jackass Ziggy.
Yes.
I'm not spoiling anything. Does he have the duck yet?
No, he doesn't have the duck yet.
Okay, I'm not giving anything away. But at one point, he like gets a pet duck.
Okay.
Anyway, but you watch that show, and especially as you get into season three and four, it just becomes a heartbreaking show. Like even more so because you look at these kids and you think, well, it's like with Wallace. Sorry, spoilers, first season, whatever, where he goes to visit his grandmother or whatever, like, or his aunt or something, and she lives off in the country.
Yeah.
And he's all like, it's the weirdest noise. I don't know what it is. And it's the crickets or something. And it's sort of sweet and sad. But you look at these kids, like on The Wire, who, you know, they're like dealing in the corner or whatever, and they've got some financial means, however illicit they may be. And you think, you know, a plane ticket costs a couple hundred bucks. You know, getting an apartment somewhere costs, you know, $1,000, $1,500. You know, you can leave, you know, you can. But of course, the thing is, though, I say that from my perspective as a non inner city, you know, white guy who grew up in a non inner city somewhere. And David Simon, actually, he was talking about The Wire at one point. They interviewed him and because people would occasionally they would criticize The Wire for depicting drug dealing as the only avenue or the only realistic avenue for these, you know, for a lot of inner city kids. And because The Wire does in some ways make it seem like an inevitability. Like if you grow up in certain parts of certain cities that like you have to try very, very hard because the default is that you will end up in a criminal lifestyle or in a lifestyle that is not desirable in some way. And they say, well, if, you know, the wire is irresponsible because it basically says that these kids have no choice but to deal drugs. If, you know, people have a moral choice and they have options in their lives. And Simon, there's no way to make David Simon just go mental than to say that, because what he always responds with, he says, and it often starts with, listen, you big fat white bastard. But David Simon's response is always, when people look at a show like The Wire, or they look at, you know, just the reality of it, where there is somebody in an inner city who ends up in that lifestyle, they say, you always say to yourself, well, I would choose differently if I were in that scenario. And he said, and I'd never really thought about it this way. He says, but what you don't realize is, if you were in that scenario, you would not be you. In other words, yeah, the you that grew up in Seattle looks at that and says, well, I would choose differently. But that's only because you grew up in Seattle, which affected your personality in a certain way that lets you see things in that way and gives you that perspective. If you grow up in the inner city, you will not see it the same way as you are seeing it now. You will be a totally different person. People who say that, like, I would choose differently in that scenario, assume that in that scenario, they would be exactly the same person they are now, which, of course, isn't the case.
Well, it's one of the reasons that John Singleton made Boys in the Hood is that he wanted to illustrate that exact point, that it's really, really hard to get out. I mean, he managed to, like, you know, go to film school and got to make movies. But the thing is, that movie was about, you know, his life growing up. Furious Styles is based on his dad. And, you know, so it's like all that entire movie is essentially autobiographical.
Yeah. And it's like, and you just, and you really do. I mean, I will never pretend to understand that, but you do get a little bit of a sense of how, you know, and somebody says, you have to keep in mind how difficult it really is in the inner city when you have nothing to come up with $2,000. I mean, and, you know, and even if you are, you know, even if you have that, or even if you, you know, again, we go back to the Wire where, the kids have got, you know, the wad of cash in their pocket from dealing or whatever. That's really not even it. It's just that, like, the perspective, I think, if you are in a certain place, whether it is Baltimore or like Orem, becomes like that is your horizon, that is your entire world, and you just cannot conceive of picking up and going somewhere else.
Yeah, and you have those questions like, what will I do when I get there?
Right.
Where will I live?
I don't know anybody.
I don't know anyone. Yeah. I'll be alone. I mean, when I came here to go to culinary school, and I came here with my then soon-to-be ex-husband, I literally knew no one. I had no friends here. I knew no one. All I knew was that I had been here and I really liked the town. And of all of my options as far as getting out of L.A. and going someplace to going to school, I was going to come here and go to culinary school. And that was it. And it was terrifying. It was really scary because I did grow up in that situation. I spent my entire life in the same place. I went to school with the same people from elementary school all the way through high school. You know, I always, all the way through high school, I lived in the same town and went to school with the same people. And I still never really, you know, I moved up into L.A. for a while.
Right.
But by the time I left L.A., I had moved back into like another little beach town that was like neighbor to the town I'd grown up in. I was essentially back in exactly the same place. And it was like, and I left the state and went someplace where I knew no one. And it was that thing I had always read about in books with like some kid's parents, like dad gets a new job and we're moving to a new place and you're going to go to a new school. And I suddenly, for the first time in my life as an adult, knew what that terror was like.
It's very unnerving. And that's, you know, coming from a relatively, you know, compared to many folks, coming from a relatively comfortable background and a place where you did at least feel like you have options. But you just get that thing, I think, where just, you know, in certain environments where, you know, this is the last thing I'll say about that. So, like, I don't really care. But the best example I can come up with is that, so Laura and I have this, a couple that, I mean, that we are, you know, that we know some friends with, and it's a lesbian couple, and they just, and so it's bad enough. I mean, you talk about, like, layers of just the wrong place to live. You know, so they're a gay couple. They're a lesbian couple, which in many ways is actually harder to be a gay woman or to be a lesbian couple in Salt Lake than it is to be a gay male couple, because then it's like not only you're an affront to God, you're an affront to men, because your proper role is to be a broodmare for the church, you know, and so, you know, you're just, you know, you're rejecting God and penises. And really, you know, that's really what you're here for, Don. You ladies are here to serve at the pleasure of, you know, of the brotherhood. So they're a lesbian couple in Salt Lake. So that's like bad enough. And then they had kids, you know, and they decided to have kids, which just sucks for them, and it sucks for the kids. And I'm not a person that believes like it, that it's the, you know, that, well, think of the children having two, you know, having gay parents. It's not like that would I would ever say that, except in Salt Lake,
yeah,
where A, it is going to be like a social scorning, like those kids that we cannot even imagine. I mean, those kids are like 3 and 4 now, and I just look at them and I just think, like, you have no idea. You have no idea what it's going to be like going to school in Salt Lake with gay parents. And also the fact that because in Salt Lake, of course, they can't marry, and the non-reproductive parent has no rights. And so Laura and I – and it was that horrible thing where you – have you ever had somebody who was like getting engaged or married to the wrong person, and you had that thing of like, do we tell him? Do we tell him that she's a whore? I just don't know. Or like, do we tell her that she's marrying a complete ass? And finally, you just don't because you know it wouldn't make any difference.
Well, and because ultimately they'll just get mad at
you. They'll get mad at
Usually
you.
Usually what happens is they'll tell the person that you're unsure of. This has happened to me before. They tell the unsavory partner.
Doesn't like you.
And then that person just hates you forever.
And undermines then, you forever.
Yeah, and forever. It's like you're the horrible bitch that tried to destroy their relationship.
Until they get a divorce, and at which point they come back to you, and you go, well, I know. And they go, why didn't you tell me? And you go, I did tell you. But Laura actually did like a little bit of a mini intervention with them before they had kids. And she's just like, you know, it's like if you have kids now, and then you split up in 10 years – and she turned to the woman who is not going to be having the children, and she said, you know, like if you have it, they're not married, but if you split up, if you get divorced in 10 years, you know, you're not going to have any rights. She could just keep the kids, not that you ever would, and blah, 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 but like she could keep the kids. You could never be able to see them again. She could take them to another state. You know, you're not going to have any visitation, whatever. And she made like the full court press, like you got, and so the punchline, of course, is that this couple, where do they vacation every year? In goddamn Portland, Oregon. And we just love it here. And we're like, move. You've got money. They both have great jobs. They've got money. They've got the means. And we just say, you're gay. You've got kids. You're in Salt Lake. You love Portland. Move here. And they do that. Well, you know, it's just so hard to move. And, you know, and at that point, you just have to kind of just, you know, to agree to disagree is what you do there, Don.
Yeah.
Well, let's do one more. Then we'll do the clue, Thursday's clue for each vending snack of the week.
Also, did we mention Squires Electric at any point?
I was actually just wondering that myself, but I think we did. I don't know. Did we?
I don't remember. I remember it from the first show, but I don't. I think we've just been yapping.
Well, let me just.
For hours.
Out of the odds of that. Let me just take this moment to say that Squires Electric makes this yapping possible. You can contact them at 503-252. 1609, 503-252-1609. They are a business partner here at the Emerson News Network. That's not just Legion of News. It's the Rick Emerson Show. It's both shows put together, and they help to keep this program on the air and broadcasting to 147 countries. And so that's made possible by y'all through your fine subscriptions and your generous support, and we appreciate that. And now I have become a PBS guy. I just need telephones ringing in the background. If you'd like to keep watching Red Dwarf and Red Green and Faulty
Towers.
Because
we can't do what we do without you.
That's right, Sheila. You know, The Young Ones is such a great show, and it would be a shame if something were to happen to it. And it will be your fault, listener and viewer, if these programs are taken away. And we will hold you personally accountable. Ooh, the phones are ringing. And then they've got like ringing, like metal bell ringing telephones in the background, even though it's 2011.
Yeah. And then they try to convince you that it's some kind of a great bargain, that if you give you $75, you'll get like a $1.50 tote bag, which the only purpose for the tote bag is really so you can walk around carrying it and be smug.
No, that's totally what it is. They ought to have the Onion design their merchandise, because it would probably be better at that point. You know, you could totally get like some sort of like a, they should, oh my God. OMG. They should totally have a Smuggie that you get. Like, if you donate, you get a Snuggie from PBS, but yeah, it's a Smuggie.
You know, we could do that.
Yes, we could.
The Rick Emerson Show Smuggie.
Okay, never mind. F you, PBS. You can't have that idea.
PBS.
I'm just drawing that. The Smuggie, where you donate the... I mean, not that we even... I mean, I would feel like a jackass even asking for donations because, you know, it's like a 32-cent-a-day thing and, you know, with a subscription or whatever. But, I mean, hey, you know, yeah. The Smuggie. And then it would say something. It would have some sort of whatever on it, and you would get that by supporting the Rick Emerson Show, the Smuggie. Okay, we got to think on that.
We will take care of
this. The Smuggie. All right, Cheryl, if you're listening, please take a letter, won't you? Smuggie.
All right, awesome.
Don't anybody go registering smuggie.com. I swear to God, I'll find you. All right, that's fantastic. Well, this moment of brilliance and observatory inspiration was brought to you by Squires Electric. That is squireselectric.com, 503-252-1609. They help to make this program possible. They're licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. Squires Electric, if it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. That is squireselectric.com and so forth. All right. Well, let's do one more of your choosing here, and then we'll do the snack, the Name That Snack Clue of the Week.
Okay. A quadriplegic man is suing Disneyland in federal court, alleging the theme park left him on the It's a Small World ride for 40 minutes after it had stalled while staff evacuated other passengers. The lawsuit, filed Monday in U.S. District Court, alleges Disneyland violated the Americans with Disabilities Act because it didn't have proper procedures in place for evacuating disabled passengers from the ride.
That seems unlike them.
Jose Martinez is also suing for negligence, emotional distress, and liability. He alleges Disney employees did not summon paramedics when his blood pressure spiked while he was trapped on the ride. Disneyland Resort says in a statement, it is accessible to all guests and has procedures in place for evacuating disabled customers.
I mean, I don't know, but I default to believing Disney because it seems like they don't screw around with that stuff. It seems like Disney, as you've noticed, is very bureaucratic. They cover, they dot all the, I mean, they have accidents and everything, but they dot all the I's and cross the T's. So.
Well, I just wonder if it took – because he says for 40 minutes while they evacuated other passengers, I'm wondering if it took 40 minutes to get everybody off and
he just didn't go first.
One of them, yes, because I know, you know, it's a small world. They've got those boats.
Right.
So I imagine it could – depending on where the ride stalls, it could be kind of a pain.
Imagine being stuck on a small world ride for 45 minutes. Your mind would crack.
I got stuck for almost a half an hour on Pirates of the Caribbean once, and that was crazy.
I can't even – where was it? Where were you stuck?
We were stuck – I was stuck about three boat lengths from the cave where all of the treasure is.
Oh.
And apparently the reason that the ride stopped is that the boats up ahead, it stopped right there because some guy was drunk and he jumped out of the boat.
I'm going to get me some treasure.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Awesome.
And so they immediately, because they have cameras and they're watching and they have some big, you know, kill switch. So the thing stopped. And so then the next boat comes up and goes thump behind it and thump behind it. So we were about four boats down and we were like actually going up like the
oh, that's weird.
The thing. So we're like in the thing and listening to the like yo ho yo dead men tell no to blah, 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 for a half an hour.
Just say that when she were dead.
Because we were actually on this rampy thing, so there was like no way we could actually get out of the boat.
Oh, that sucks. The thing about here's the thing about having no legs, Cheryl, is that. That's an advantage for. It's really not an advantage as such, but I will say that especially at a place
I
like Disneyland,
so.
Or in a state like California, if you are handicapped or you have the if you have the handicap sticker, you can usually, I mean, even if you're using it improperly, which is really the best way to use it, you can get people to snap too. I mean, if you need something, because they just fear lawsuit, they fear like the ADA laws being brought down to them, and so you can just like. My grandmother would do that all the time. My grandmother was a horrible person, but I mean, I can sort of get behind this that she would. She had a handicap card because she had, I don't know, she had some damn thing. But it was like she could walk, but she would totally feign that she couldn't walk whenever she would go to see the Carson show being taped. And she would do everything but snap her fingers to demand that they put her in first. And she would give me a wheelchair that she had just for that day. And she would sit in a wheelchair, wave her like handicap placard and pretend that she couldn't walk. And they would immediately, they would take her in before everybody else. She got to leave before everybody else. So that is the power of the lawsuit working for you.
Yeah, I have never taken advantage of this, but the fact that I have my little parking placard so I can park in the handicap space. If I don't want to actually get out of my car and go into the gas station to pay when I have to pay for gas, the ones where they make you go in to pay.
Right.
I wouldn't have to if I didn't want to. I could show them my thing, and somebody would have to come out and get my money
and
wait on me.
I would probably do that, and I wouldn't consider that taking advantage because you were using it legally and lawfully. That is how it's supposed to be used.
Yeah, well, I take advantage of it in so many ways already.
You don't want to abuse the abuse.
Oh, I already abuse it horribly, so I don't want to abuse it further.
Well, fair enough. All right, well, we should do this then, which is that, which is... There we go, that. It is time for your E.H. Venting Name That Snack Clue for Thursday. February 10th, 2011. Don't forget, tomorrow we'll be giving out the final clue for the week. And once we have given out the final clue, but not before, once we've given out the final clue, if you are the first person to correctly identify this week's snack via snack at rickemerson.com, that is snack, S-N-A-C-K, snack at rickemerson.com, you will get yourself a heaping helping, a giant bag full of consumable goodness from EH Vending. You can find out more about them by going to ehvending.com. That is ehvending.com. So if you are stuck in the office all day long, or maybe the vending machine you've got there is just it's terrible, or you got that like 1975 vending machine where it's just like, you know, with the sort of like the faded pictures on the front of like coffee in a cruller, and is it, there's never anything good in there, or it's just not working, or it's like if you're the guy who owns the joint and you were looking into putting a vending machine in, but you talked to vending companies, they said no, you got to have 15 stores or more before we'll even talk to you. You know, you want to be able to find something that fits your budget and something that fits your needs. And those of your valued workers, you can do that by contacting EH Vending. You can do that several ways. You can go to their website. It's ehvending.com. That is ehvending.com. Or you can call Josh. He is the owner. You can call Josh at 360-816-1853. That is 360-816-1853. Or James can be reached at 503-897-8204. And once you get the machine put in, it's not like, you know, a lot of those companies, they put the machine in and it's like the guy shows up once every 6 weeks or whatever to put new, to put new Funyuns in the machine. And then it's like you don't ever see the guy. You can't get him day out there to service it. You can't get him to clean it or fix it. It is not that way with EH Vending. They are going to make sure that you are absolutely happy with the service. They will do whatever it takes to make sure that you are satisfied. So you contact them at ehvending.com. And, of course, they're longtime listeners of the Rick Emerson Show, extended members of the family, as it were. So please tell me you heard it here. That is ehvending.com. .com, 360-816-1853. Join us tomorrow when I guess we'll include Mr. Big Jim Willig with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Tomorrow, talking about the life and career of Mr. Mel Brooks. Today's Name That Snack clue is cream. Yeah. Cream is the clue for today. All right. And once again, if you are the first listener to correctly identify that snack once tomorrow, Friday's clue is given via snack at rickemerson.com. You will win yourself a giant bag of goodness from EH Vending. That is EH Vending. Don't forget, if you missed yesterday's Ham Fisted Radio with Don Taylor and Bobby Fatboy Roberts, you can download that at hamfistedradio.com. You can hear it every Wednesday, 4 p.m. Pacific time, live at Cascadia, pardon me, .fm, where you can also hear Legion of News every weekday from noon until 1. That is at Cascadia.fm. And you can also download that at legionofnews.com. If you're listening to this program, the Rick Emerson Radio Show, on a podcast, you downloaded it, it's on your computer, your MP3 player, whatever. Don't forget, it does air live from around 1:20 every day until whenever we feel like shutting up. So you can hear that live weekdays, Monday through Friday, 1:20-ish or so, until end at rickemersonshow.com. Please do spread the word about this very fine radio program. We thank you for your support. I should end this with a final text from Cheryl. It says, I'm making lunch. All I heard was blah, 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 Cheryl, blah, blah, thing with having no legs, blah, blah, Cheryl. So there you go. Apparently that's what the program sounds like if you're in the other room. It's an artist rendering.
Ah.
The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology magic bird, Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl blah, 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 Kanakoa, and so forth. After a brief musical interlude, we will have an encore of today's Legion of News episode, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all, so thank you. It is Thursday, February 10th, 2011, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.